What are you drinking, Thistleweb? Not that Apple stuff, huh?
I'm a big Apple fan at this point. When I first turned up tonight, it was like 10:30-ish p.m. Seriously, I was on the coffee at that point. I had not touched a drop of booze at all. My first glass of cider was when I mentioned in the chat, right, I'm going to top up for the first time. That genuinely was. I mean, believe it or not, that was my first. So, yeah, I've been on the cider since then.
Lot will have that effect on you.
They will do, yes. And you're included in that, yes. Anywho, we were saying, mentioned about ham radios, which I personally have no interest in, but it's fascinating nonetheless.
Hey, Dor made it back.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Dor.
Hey, Dor.
Howdy.
Hello.
Whoa, Red Dwarf, your mic is hot.
I'm actually standing out front of Ruth Chris waiting for my car to come back, and my wife's inside because it's too cold.
You lucky dog.
Yeah,
so
happy
you took
anniversary.
Her to Ruth Chris. Oh, that's a nice place.
Happy anniversary, man.
Thank you very much, guys. I'll try to be on here in like 2 hours or so.
Cool.
That's devotion right there.
Some of us will still be sober.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, I was going to say speak for yourself.
Unfortunately, I'm on call, so nothing like that tonight.
Oh, I'll still be sober. I haven't got enough beers left to get drunk.
Yeah, I got up to go look. I think all I
That's
got
just
is some
poor planning.
I think all I got is some bourbon and some
I still
wine.
Got leftovers from OLF. No, it was actually good planning, because if I'd have gone out and got enough to get drunk, I'd be sober and up halfway into the morning and really be hurting, or I'd have to knock off and fall asleep, which would just be almost as bad.
Yeah, that was exactly why I never got drunk earlier on. That was why I turned up at like 10:30 UK time. Still stone cold sober, just about to start drinking, and people saying, oh no, I call bullshit on that, he's been drinking. No, honestly, no, seriously, I've just finished my coffee, honestly, you might not believe it, but it's true.
I'm not drunk, I'm Scottish.
That's an excuse I use quite a lot.
Oh, I gotta turn off Fox.
Do your neighbors buy that one when you're stumbling home?
Do your neighbors sound drunk too?
I'm sexy. Oh, sorry, that was Austin Powers.
You just did a Scottish accent of a Scottish accent. That was good.
Yeah, I do that. It's very meta. Yeah, meta fat bastard, you know.
That's like when Fab tries to pretend he has a German accent.
We all know it's an Indian accent. We all know that.
You know, there's a reason they think all the Scots are drunk. You gotta be drunk to wear a dress like that.
Oh, I was gonna suggest because where there's smoke, there's fire.
I'm not gonna defend that other than they say haggis is rather nice.
I have some haggis that I need to eat, actually. I love the stuff.
See, you've gotta be drunk to go for that, too.
Honestly, haggis is actually quite nice. I mean, as long as you can sort of put to the back of your mind the fact that it's a sheep's stomach, haggis is actually really nice. To be fair, haggis is really nice. It's bizarre, but it's really
nice. To be
fair,
it's probably not all that bad. I can't stand the texture.
I would try it in a minute. It's even
so. Yeah, I'd try it as well. I've just never been around it.
I've had haggis. It's not bad.
But then I'll try anything twice.
May follow it up with some Rocky Mountain oysters.
My goodness.
I draw a line, man.
Yeah,
Rocky Mountain oysters are really good.
I'm sure they are, but I wouldn't eat them on a dare.
See, why?
Dare I ask what a Rocky Mountain oyster is?
See, the thing why is for so foreboding? What is it?
It's what? This cow is a balls. Family show. It's testicles of an animal.
Bull balls. When they castrate a bull and turn him into an ox, the Rocky Sweet Mountain Heaps. Oysters are the testicles. I think of sheep too, right?
They're deep fried.
Wow.
That doesn't help.
5150. Yeah, he said he pan fries. Not your kind of thing, Plateau. Pan fries them.
You guys can mock it all you want. They're damn good.
I imagine they are. I've never had a chance to try them.
I'm not mocking personally. I'm just revolted.
Are they? What's the texture? Are they just meaty? Are they chewy? What are they like? Compared to something else.
I would imagine that they're not meaty. Would be my guess because meat is muscle mass, and organs are usually nothing like the muscle.
I've heard they Built taste like cream. Tenderloin.
Have you ever had sweetbread?
Money on chewy.
Has anybody here ever had sweetbread?
Oh yeah.
Built-in cream.
Well, it tastes a lot like sweetbread. It's just then deep fried.
Oh, okay.
It's really not.
What did you
say
about Family Show?
Yeah, no, oh, I had high hopes.
Nah, he was full of it. This show is it's gone family a couple times when people brought their kids on, but yeah, pretty much we, you know, it's HBR. You say what you want.
Well, it was last year that we brought up that there's always swearing on HBR. You don't censor anything.
Yeah, freedom of fucking speech. Woo-hoo!
I can't believe you're that juvenile that the testicles of a bull gets us at an X rating.
Yeah, bollocks to that, tell you.
Yeah, they're bollocks.
I think it's time I went to bed.
Or as the Axis said in IRC, deep fried nuts.
You going to bed to dream of Rocky Mountain oysters there, Poppy?
I think so, yes.
Yeah,
That's a terrible image, man.
To quote Kung Pao, that's a lot of nuts.
Yeah, I think I'd have waited a few minutes to drop out at a different spot. But before you go, we'll say Happy New Year and good night to you, and we'll say Happy New Year to Argentina, Paraguay, and Chile.
Nicely done. Good night, John. And Happy New Year, everyone.
See you, Poppy.
Should I do all
Happy New Year?
Good night. Good night,
Poppy. Happy New Year.
Yeah, and thanks for coming, man. Thanks for helping us out.
No problem.
You guys are reminding me of the old joke about the bull testicles they used to do at the bull ring in Spain. They came from the results of the bull ring. And every once in a while, they'd come not so big and meaty and juicy. They were scrawny little things. The waiter, of course, says, well, sometimes the bull wins.
Nice.
All right, I'm going to do Auld Lang Syne. Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot and all days of Auld Lang Syne?
Bravo.
Very nice. Key of F.
I was hoping he'd go the next verse where it gets even higher.
Nope. Not unless I make Rocky Mountain oysters out of myself.
Yeah, I was ready to jump in on the whole bullfighting thing. When I was a wee boy, we went to Spain. My mum and dad went to Spain, and obviously the family holiday. And we went to see a bullfight in Madrid, and I could not stand it. I hated it. We were actually watching a bullfight in the flesh, watching these poor animals. I hated it. I absolutely hated it. It was one of these things, it was like a blood sport to me. Somehow me, at like 9 years old or something, recognised it was a blood sport, and I was just horrified by this thing, watching this thing in the flesh. The point where I was actually sort of so upset that they spent... Actually, in hindsight, I feel sorry for them, because they spent a fortune to take the whole family to bullfight. And they spent most of the night in like a quiet sort of cafe outside the arena, because I couldn't watch the bullfight. We had to leave early because of me. but no, the bullfighting is absolutely horrendous in person. When you see it in the flesh, it's horrendous.
Yeah, it's. I'm pretty sensitive to the ethical treatment of animals. You know, I'm not. I have slaughtered animals, and you know, I think it's a matter of respect to not. Drag it out.
Yeah, that's not slaughter. That's playing with it.
It's cruel.
Yeah, it was basically it was the cruelty element. I think that's what my brain picked up on, even at like 9 or 8 years old or whatever, however old I was at the time, that's what I picked up on, and I couldn't watch it. I really couldn't watch it. It was just horrifying to me.
You think that's bad? Try a rodeo.
As a guy who's been out hunting a couple times, I don't really consider myself a hunter yet, but I'm trying to be. I'll totally agree with that. You do not want to drag that out. It's disrespectful and it's cruel. And as cruel as the that bullfighting seems at first glance, if you look into it and look at the details, it's so much worse than you think it is.
And as I say, rodeo's the same way. It's just torture to a lot of these animals. It's ridiculous.
Yeah,
except rodeo, they don't kill them afterwards.
Yeah, I get the fact that killing animals, in some cases, that is like, control of resources. And I get that, and I get the fact that killing animals for food or thing, I get that, I understand that. But for sport, for torturing these poor animals as sport, that's where I draw the line personally.
There's just really a point where you have to look at it and just say, it may not have the same consciousness, but it just ain't right.
Absolutely.
Sorry, I didn't want to bring the conversation down. That was my bad. Anywho, one time at band camp.
Well, this is one of the few places where you can have a conversation like that. Unfortunately, cultures are not only desensitized, but they're sensitized against being, against even noting the desensitization of others.
Now, this is an interesting conversation, I think, actually.
Yeah, but would you say the running of the bulls is kind of payback?
Payback for what?
No, of course not. They don't put the bullfighters out in front of the bulls and say, here, stand here until he's done with you. No, that's not payback.
I think he's talking about the people who get trampled.
That's just a whole lot of stupid, that's what that is.
Yeah, it is.
Right, I am too. The people who are getting trampled are not the bullfighters. The matadors.
No, it's the people that try to be macho about it.
Drunk teenagers.
Well, hell, who can really disagree with them being trampled?
Yeah, no, there's some thing you see every year. I think it could be in Valencia in Spain, or Valencia in Spain, where they've got the bull run. We've got all these bulls running through the street. And you hear occasionally in the news, oh, such and such a people got gored by the bull. But it serves you fucking right for jumping in front of the bulls. That's what you're there for. That's the whole buzz of the thing.
You can't falling blame in front the of bull. Them.
Yeah, you can't blame the bull. You're channeling the bulls down this path, and you're jumping in front of the bulls for your own kicks. I don't give a shit whether you get bored with the bulls. If you lose your leg through that, so fucking what? You shouldn't be jumping in front of the bastards.
I used to live in Montana, and it's the same thing we get over there. Everybody gets up in arms when they get kicked by a moose. The problem is, they sneak up behind the moose to get a picture, and they wonder why they get kicked by a moose. And then they want to put down. It's just like these people that taunt dogs, and then get so upset when they get bit.
They should have billboards advertising zoom lenses there so that people wouldn't have to sneak up so close.
Yeah, they say all of that I've only ever seen on like videos and reports and things. I've actually seen, as I said, I've seen a bull fight with my own eyes, and it is cruel. It's absolutely cruel. So I can totally grok the whole bull running and the whole animals for sport thing. I totally grok that, because I've seen a bullfight with my own eyes, and it is horrendous. It really is.
Well, it's like a lot of people say, hunting is for sport. It's not really so much sport as it is just something you can find to do to bring your food to yourself.
Yeah, turning an animal into food, that's a different thing altogether. For me, that's something that has some value. I'm one of these people where if I can distinguish an animal on the plate, I can't eat it. It's always got to be, chicken's fine as long as it's kind of not in the shape of a chicken sort of thing. And like a pig on the plate with the apple in its mouth, as long as it's not actually, I couldn't eat that, but I could eat the pork. of the ham, you know, because it's not actually, I couldn't actually see the animal behind it. You know, that's sort of where I am, which is possibly hypocritical, I don't know.
No, I understand that, I think. It's like, if you actually see the animal alive, or you dead, or even if, or just the animal itself, you may not want to eat it then.
No, I'd much prefer to see the animal alive, and if I have a choice, I'd prefer to butcher it myself than try to, you know, trust as to what's going on behind the scenes or where it came from. And, I'd much prefer that. And as far as, you know, hunting as a sport, the sport is in the hunt, not in the kill. The kill is, you know, certainly the end game, but the sport is in being outdoors, learning, you know, about your local environment and getting to learn, I mean, you know, like every little tree and rock and hill and, you know, trying to put all of your learned knowledge and skills to use. I mean, that's where the sport is, not so much in the kill. I mean, if that were all it was, you just go to the target range.
Rural exploration, and while we're at it, let's kill something.
Bob, you know as well as I do, there's a lot of people that do it for the sport, the trophy. They leave the meat there. It's very commercialized.
And frankly, if you do that in Montana and actually leave the meat there, they will find you.
There are those guys, but they don't keep their hunting licenses for long.
No, they take the meat, but they just give it away. You know, I mean, but they're there for the trophy.
The trophy is one thing, but at least if the meat is getting used, that I can see is fine. But people that, you know, just try to ditch it or get rid of it, it's like these people that would hunt an elephant for the tusks alone. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, if the actual fabric of the contents of the animal are being used for something, that's understandable. I don't necessarily agree with it, but it is perfectly understandable. It's something I would accept. Like, this is food. This is, you know, that's fine. I get that. But when it's just sport, no. Absolutely not. And on that note, I'm going to top my cider up.
Now, there are also plenty of people who will donate the food to it, or donate the meat to a food bank and similar. I can even see that. The problem comes when they just try to dispose of it or when they don't use it responsibly. But at the same time, there is still something to be said for eliminating excess animals in the area.
Yeah, I was going to mention the food bank thing too, because any animal that's taken I won't even say illegally, but not legally, because there are times when, you know, you shoot a turkey and you hit two or something like that, but then they'll take the animal that's not been taken legally, and that'll go to a food bank. The same thing will happen. But if people poach, if they get caught poaching, that animal goes to the food bank.
You know, I feel like I really have to defend hunters, that the amount of abuse that goes on among hunters is extremely low when you consider the amount of abuses in a factory farm setting where, you know, animals are being treated cruelly as a rule.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Look at turkeys, a perfect example. I mean, you don't have, look what they do to turkeys and chickens, where they pen them all up, they can't move, just so they can fatten them up for Thanksgiving or whatever. That's as cruel as bullfighting, I would say.
You know, a hunter has the respect to face his animal that he's going to eat and deal with the consequences and moral implications of that. And I think most hunters that I know are more in tune with where their food comes from and have a respect for that animal than somebody who's never, ever had to take another animal's life for food, and then just goes and gets a cheeseburger and it's a food-like product to them. It's not, there's no process behind it.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, you know, and the few animals that I have killed, you know, I've butchered myself, and I it sounds weird to say, because it's, you know, me saying it who's done it, saying it about myself, so it sounds self-serving, but I think there's a certain amount of respect in butchering the animal yourself that you're just not going to get, you know, any other way.
Yeah, I think if people had to basically, you know, kill their own animal that they're gonna eat, or a fish, or even a fish, just even a fish, you know, that for some people that could be enough to make, oh, I'm not gonna eat that now. Because I can think of myself when I went fishing a long time, quite a long time ago now, and, you know, caught a fish, and then it's like, I was a kid, and it's like, right, you're gonna eat this fish now, kind of thing, or you're supposed to, or you could, and it's like, I thought, I can't eat this fish, I saw it alive, I saw it when it was alive and stuff, so yeah, I couldn't do that.
You know, I've never taken delight in taking an animal's life, but, you know, to be disconnected from it and to go to a McDonald's or even, you know, people think if they go and get a salad that has chicken on it, that somehow that's, you know, that's healthy, good food. You're so disconnected from the life of that chicken that, you know, that chicken may have never even been able to walk. They're genetically bred to have a breast so large that they can't even get up in the cage that they're in. And yet you think you're somehow, because someone else took that chicken's life, that it's a justified thing.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, a lot of people, they kind of think, right, it's fine, you can eat meat, and no problem, whatever. And because, well, it's there, somebody else killed it, like you say, and, you know, it's being sold. And, yeah. But if you had to kill it themselves, like I was saying, then they would possibly be put off eating it. Or you hear sometimes about, I think it's Japan or somewhere like that, where people go off to a restaurant and they're like, right, I want to have a fish, I want to have, for whatever it is. And so they come out with the animal and they're like, okay, so which one do you want when it's alive? And then people get put off from eating that.
I think it would kind of be easy to say nothing here and kind of sound like, you know, I thought I was better than other people. I don't think I'm better than anyone because I've killed my own animal or butchered my own animal. I just think I have a respect for them that I never had before.
You know, I think it's a, I feel that the reason factory farms create the cruel environments that they do is how far disconnected people are from that food.
That, oh, I'd agree with that 100%.
You know, hunting as a rule is, when you look at the overall economic impact of hunting, that these deers, we don't want predators. We don't want a bunch of mountain lion and a bunch of wolves and a bunch of coyotes taking these animals down. So they're going to breed and their populations are going to increase. And you have to have pressure. And hunters pay willingly and subsidize a lot of other...
Hello. You. Hey, Tony.
Hello.
Yes, we can hear you, SMLR.
But just barely.
Yeah, you're pretty low.
Yeah, you need to bring it up a little bit.
Yeah, you're similar to a few others I've heard.
Yeah, sorry about that. We're doing a little bit of testing. I need to find where the touch to speak is. Hold on, I'm sorry.
Anyways, I was just a quick point. I don't want to you know, beat a dead horse is bad.
That's horrible.
It wasn't intentional, but just that.
It's the first time I laughed there.
probably not something we should be laughing at, but you know, the revenue brought in by the Division of Wildlife for Fishing and Game provides a lot of funds for conservation efforts inside of state parks, and you know, it is a truly give and take relationship with the hunters. You know, I don't know a lot. They only give out enough tags to take the animals to keep the populations under control. It's much more respectful of these animals than people give it credit.
Yeah, that's the conservation part of it. I was always amazed at the huge differences between, say, animal lover, animal rights versus conservationist versus naturalist. All three very different.
Well, I can't speak to any of those.
I think he means just the different methodologies there.
Well, you look at an animal lover, say, is don't kill Bambi. A conservationist is to regulate the tags for hunters, things like that.
And yeah, the conservationist says don't kill Bambi till he's got antlers.
Yeah, there you go. But the naturalist would introduce the natural predators, see?
I thought the naturalist just ran around naked.
Yep.
Naturalists tend to... Right? Naturalists are more naturalists in theory than in practice.
They like to think things up.
You're a naturalist till a bear is standing on your doorstep trying to pound your door in.
Yeah, here in Michigan, we have without the hunting, we would have a overpopulation of deer.
The other thing about naturalists, and I will say this, most naturalists who I've spoken to are probably completely uneducated as to nature. What
are naturalists? Like people who go out and live in the woods but don't really know anything about it?
No.
Well, people the naturalist point of view would say if you want to if you want the right deer population and it doesn't take off, you would bring back the wolves that are gone.
Yeah, until one of them eats your kid.
Right. I mean, basically, the wolves have been driven out, which made the deer population grow.
And the naturalists would tell you to stay out of the woods.
They did that in Minnesota, didn't they? They brought back, actually introduced wolves back in the places?
Yeah, the other thing
was
that
the naturalists... Was it wolves or mountain lions?
Maybe both.
We never got rid of mountain lions. There's mountain lions, but there's wolves in Colorado now, too.
Yeah, all of the predators are on the increase right now, including coyotes. And a naturalist would say, well, let the coyotes be, you know, let them be where they are. But coyotes are invasive species in most parts of the United States. They don't belong in most of the places where they are. The same is true of fisher cats and one or two other predators that I can't think of right now.
The unfortunate thing is that when the predator population gets out of control because the prey population hasn't been properly managed, that there isn't much you can do with a predator carcass. You know, it's not edible meat.
No, it's not.
Can't you take its force field and use it for camouflage?
You can, but nobody wears it themselves, and people don't buy it anymore like they used to.
It's force field?
It's pelt.
I was making a predator joke.
Oh, that predator. Nice.
Sorry, because I have no idea what you guys are talking about, so I'm just grasping at straws here.
No,
that was good. What a fine job you're doing.
You're a vegetarian, aren't you, Klaatu?
I am.
Do you hunt your own parsley?
Actually, no, but yes. I mean, there are gardens and stuff, but I don't do it as much as I should, but I would like... It's something that I want to do more of, is gardening.
He traps his own carrots, too.
Those are slippery little buggers. You really got to sneak up on them.
Well, yeah. Well, you gotta
is there a reason
the
why you're a vegetarian?
All the reasons you can imagine. Like health, moral reasons, just everything.
My sister's like that, Klaatu, and it's all literally, yeah.
Oh, and the I forgot to mention the disdain for what you guys were talking about, like the you know, the I forget what term you were using that I really liked, the what did you call the factory farms or something, like what did you call it?
Yeah, factory farming. Factory
yeah,
farming.
Factory. Yeah, that really repels me as well.
Oh, I'm 100% against factory farming.
Strange thing is, I think most people are, but not most people are enough to take a stand against it. You know, like, I mean, I think a lot of people will still just keep buying disgusting meat, you know? Like, instead of saying, oh, this really probably came from, like, horrendous conditions, I think I'll skip it this time.
Well, I think there is a substantial food movement that is favoring grass-finished beef.
Yeah, yeah.
Grass-finished animals. You know, I'm not a vegetarian, but I gathered that. I do seek out, you know, we have local producers here. We have a year-round farmers market where there's four different producers that are local producers.
Nice.
They'll give you can look at pictures of the cow you're actually buying meat from. It's been as, you know, that it's had as good of a life as a cow is going to have. You know, we get into some interesting territory because they come out with some pretty ridiculous studies saying that it has a greater impact on the environment to raise cows in a factory farm, and people think if you stopped eating meat, period, you would have a large impact on global warming. But we're still growing crops with huge inputs from oil that are having pretty devastating impact on our planet, not just in consumption of oil products, of petroleum, but in its overall effect, and that's not sustainable at all. So food in general is pretty borked in the world right now.
I do know exactly how you feel, Klaatu. My sister is, if it's red, it ain't dead.
I think you cut out at the end of that, Bill. What was that? If it's red, it what?
Oh, if it's red, it ain't dead.
I don't track that.
If it's red, it's not dead.
She don't eat tomatoes, huh?
No.
Hey, okay, I got a quick question that reminded me of something I meant to ask earlier, especially when Dude Man was around. I could have swore I heard on one of the Oddcast shows, somebody said that like an egg, a hard-boiled egg and a tomato gives you all the nutrition you need for a day. I tried Googling that, and I couldn't find anything on it. Has anybody like heard that, and know, where does that come from? Does anybody
know? I'm pretty skeptical. I mean, other people can chime in if they have read it, but I tend to be skeptical of any nutritionist kind of advice. You know, it's just like I use my common sense and I gauge how I feel at the end of the day, you know, and I think back of what I ate, and if I don't feel energetic and like if I'm getting tired at like midnight instead of 2 a.m., you know, then I think, okay, I should have had more spinach today or whatever. I'm not even sure if I believe that every person has the same requirements, you know, or maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I'm not a scientist, but that's just kind of how I feel about it. And I know that every nutritionist advice I've ever read just comes across as like, well, you have to count your calories and your grams of this and your grams of that. And it just feels bogus to me.
Yeah, I know where you're
coming from. Katu, I went to a nutritionist, and I'm kind of on the line of you, but one of the first questions they asked me was, how long have you been this heavy, and what have your eating habits been like? And they said to me, it's a eating change. It's like a life change. If you want to lose weight, they can give you ways to do it. And a lot of it's just with the amount you eat, the portion you eat, and the time.
I believe that, but I mean, you've seen me, Art. I mean, that's not my issue.
Oh, absolutely. But, I mean, you eat healthy. I mean, you drink a lot of coffee, too, but they say now coffee's not bad for you. I mean, you know, it's different every month.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's why I guess I don't believe it. So, yeah, I guess what you're saying about, like, how much and what time you eat is a huge factor, I'm sure. Because, I don't think they really know exactly everything that they say they know.
And that's like going with, like you said, about being tired. Well, maybe you got up in the morning, you had coffee, you skipped the, you know, having something in the morning, you didn't eat till lunchtime, and then you had a small dinner, and all of a sudden now you're tired because you don't have any energy.
Right.
The big issue with nutrition is that they're based, there's no way to say what the results of a nutrition plan are without doing a study. And as with all studies, a small sample set with a limited control and a limited a data set gets the same credence as large long-term studies do, and they shouldn't. You know, yeah. Every time somebody does a minor study on one aspect of eating an egg, there's a study that comes out and it's given a credence in a headline that says that eggs are now bad or eggs are now good, and it makes these sweeping assumptions and ignores something like there was a cholesterol study done on eggs in Mexico that was over the course of 25 years with a large sample set, and it showed that the cholesterol contained inside of eggs over the long term did not have an overall impact on blood levels of the bad cholesterol, LDL. So, you know, these studies come, and then some research do a minor study on some college kids and give them egg whites, and they say, oh, these guys felt like shit, so this is going to be the new study. And then there's a headline that says, oh, eggs are bad for you now.
Yeah, and see, what they did with me was they had me write down what I ate every day for 2 weeks. And after that 2 weeks, I went back to the nutritionist, and we changed life habit. It wasn't a diet. It wasn't anything but a life eating change.
Right. If you're eating huge amounts of carbohydrates, very little fats, very little protein, you're going to be unhealthy. It's not a diet to change. It's saying that you're eating a lot of something you probably shouldn't be.
Yeah.
It's a lifestyle change. You know, diet means the lifestyle, and it got kind of co-opted into a commercial buzz term that is attached to these kind of ridiculous crash courses that people think are going to fix years of poor diet.
So, Art, actually, I have what's going to sound like a really rude question, but I don't mean it rude. Before the nutritionist, like, told you, hey, you know, this, what you're eating here is not good for you, you know, you should be eating more of this, less of that, did you not have like the did you know that you were not eating as well as you should? Like what I said earlier about common sense, that's like my gauge of like what I should eat. But where does that common sense come from? So did you have the common sense of like, yes, I should be eating differently? Or did it literally take a nutritionist to tell you that?
No, it literally took, because I grew up, you know, I grew up in a large household with a low, not a low income, but a middle to low income. We ate a lot of potatoes. We ate a lot of starchy filler foods, bread, potatoes, that kind of thing, which are okay for you, but in moderation.
Right.
Sure.
Okay, and, cool. That's interesting.
Yeah, so you did have a surprise.
Well, not a surprise, because, I mean, it was kind of an understanding, so to say. I mean, I knew vegetables were healthy for you, but I never realized, like, you should eat 4 vegetables and 2 to 3 fruits a day. I mean, we never grew up with that because we never had that.
Okay, so I can thank my mom, pretty much.
Exactly. I mean, if she ate, I mean, I had a friend of mine I grew up with, and I can remember going to his house after school, and every day there was a bowl of fruit on the table. And because his mom, like you said, liked to have fruit, and she liked to eat fruit, and he would eat fruit every day after school, and I never did that, and I've never just, you know, he'd like, you want a piece of fruit? Nah, I don't want that.
Darn, I was trying to blame my mom for all my life's problems, but it looks like she's helped. I'll have to find another scapegoat now.
You know, anybody
that grew up in the 1950s remembers what, meat, poultry, and dairy or something like that, the combination? That was totally biased by particular industries. The 3 food groups, anybody remember that?
Yeah, the food pyramid.
Food pyramid, that's still around, I
right.
think. I mean,
actually, they got a modified version of the food pyramid now.
The food pyramid is fucking ridiculous.
They change it about every 7 years, I think.
Yeah.
Because
back then,
the
big one was dairy. Dairy was just, you know, you just knew where that came from.
When I was a kid, they used to run commercials on the TV, and it was like a little rhyme or song or something, and it was the 3-2-4-4 way, and it was supposed to be, I think, three breads or 3 dairies, 3 dairies, 2 meats, 4 fruits and 4 vegetables a day. And they said, like, they drilled that into us.
Even that's BS, though, because, okay, what's 3 fruits?
Yeah, 3, exactly.
3 grapes? They're arbitrary numbers. It's ridiculous.
No, see, that's where, again, going back to the nutritionist, they would say to me, if you take the palm of your hand and put potatoes or a piece of chicken in the palm of your hand, that's basically one serving. You know, broccoli, put it in your hand, that's one serving. And I can say for a fact that it's not good. I mean, I would eat 2 or 3 times that amount of potatoes when we had, like, chili, when my mom made homemade chili.
Well, that's great that they gave you that amount, like, that gauge to measure it by, because, like, the food pyramid and stuff like that, they never tell you that. They're just like, yeah, just make sure you eat, you know, 3s of these and 4s of these. It's like, what do you mean? Like, 1 bag of bread or 1 slice of bread?
Well, the bottom of the pyramid, the original food pyramid, was all breads and grains. And it kind of paints this picture that, like, the top of the pyramid is the stuff you should really avoid eating. And anything at the bottom just go nuts. And that's not true of anything.
Yeah, but you got to remember, back in those days, a lot of bread was made homemade. My mom used to make bread all the time. So you had bread made with natural nuts. You know, the preservatives wasn't in the food, which is a lot different than today.
No, I agree with that, but bread is a luxury, and there is not an animal who consumes that is designed to eat that amount of grain. The exact same thing that it does to the cows, when you look at scientific studies that measure the amounts of saturated fats in a grass-finished beef versus a factory grain-finished beef, the saturated fats go through the roof, and that's the same thing all those carbohydrates from grains are doing to you, you know. I changed my diet about 2 years ago. I started exercising. I started being more healthy. I've lost 30 pounds. I've held that 30 pounds off. You know, I've continued to maintain being healthy. And it was a real journey to just bust through all the bull crap that people tell you is, this is healthy, this is what you're supposed to be doing. And the amount of incorrect information is staggering.
Oh, well, yeah, definitely.
And, and, And that's where it goes back to, like Katu said, it's common sense. I mean, that, another thing they said to me is you should eat. I mean, it's proven that you should eat within 4 hours, because after 4 hours, your body goes into a state that says whatever you put into it, it tries to store because it thinks it's starving.
Yeah, I mean, the breakfast being the most important meal of the day, that was something I always skipped breakfast, and it contributed a lot of the problems that I had. And it has to do with the amount of fat your liver stores during the day for you to get through. It's called breaking fast because that is a long period you go without that. Your liver actually stores fat during the day and releases it at night. And if you don't break that first thing, if you wait a lot, your body is going to store more fat in your body to make up for the what. You know, it's always waiting, thinking that, oh my gosh, we're not getting food first thing in the morning.
Exactly. That's exactly the thing. It's just like, you know, they said to me, you can have pizza, but, you know, and she looked right at me and said, you know, don't eat 4 slices of pizza, eat 2.
Right. Anything in moderation. But, you know, unless you've been somebody who's actually written down what you've eaten and taken a cold, hard look at everything you've eaten, it becomes this like numbers game in your head where you're like, well, I don't think I did that bad. You know, I only ate 2 pieces of pizza. But before that, you had 6 cookies. And before you had that, you know, if you haven't sat down and tracked a week or a month of what your diet is actually like and taken a look at it, it's hard to say how good or bad. You know, when I first started, I just was using an Android app and tracked everything I ate, and I was just dumbfounded by, holy cow, I thought I was taking in 2,200 calories a day, and I'm taking in like 5,000, 5,200 calories a day without even feeling it, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say that. This is where something like an Android phone or, you know, an Android device shines, I think, because I did the exact same thing. I took that, and the app made it so easy that, you know, you ate something and you could just, with voice recognition, open this app, say what you ate. You know, you had a medium-sized apple, or you had an orange, or you ate a slice of pizza. And it would just start storing the information. And like you said, when you get to the end of the week and go, holy crap, did I eat all that?
Yeah, I recently cut back severely on the amount of starches and processed grains that I've been eating. And I got to tell you, I mean, it's like I'm eating less and I'm less hungry, like most of the time.
You know, I run in the summer, I run 3 days a week and I run 3 miles a day. And on those days, I eat bacon and eggs for breakfast. And I feel full much longer than I ever have eating oatmeal or anything where there was a high starch content.
Yeah, so I eat. Almost every day I eat eggs with like onions and mushrooms and cheese for breakfast, and I can go, like I used to eat, like if I had it with toast, I'd have it with toast and you know, I'd be ready to eat again at like 11. I can usually go to 1 now, just having eaten less, and then at lunch I'll have, you know, leftovers from dinner the night before, or hard-boiled eggs, so you know, I'll make those like once a week or something like that, and you know, like throw a vegetable in there or something, like hard-boiled eggs and zucchini, like the tomato sauce zucchinis from a can. That I like that pretty good, and that's pretty filling. And like, and I'll go all day. And some days I don't even really feel the need to eat dinner. And I've dropped quite a surprising amount of weight in a short amount of time, and felt good about it too.
Well, that thing too, Pogi. But you shouldn't really go from 7 o'clock in the morning to 1 o'clock. Where you should, in the middle of that, have a coffee and a piece of fruit, or you can have a coffee and a little Danish or something, but you should eat something.
Oh, definitely. I recently lost about 50 pounds, and while I was actively losing weight, I ate more food than I did before, but it was better food, natural food, fruits, vegetables, and the like. And actually, I got to where I craved it instead of, you know, the chips and the sweets.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's honestly breaking an addiction to a sugar, fat, salt cycle. That there's ratios that are maintained throughout food products. And learning to cook on my own, learning to actually prepare my own food was a big deal. And there's a TED Talk about a guy, a researcher who was talking about the economic impact of being able to cook your own food, because when times are tough, you're able to make more use out of staples and make healthy foods that carry you through those tough economic times, that it can have a massive, in the hundreds of thousand dollars of impact on children who knew at the age of graduation of high school how to cook 7 meals from scratch without having a recipe out of the top of their head, versus kids who never learned that. And we've harped on it with my kids that they have to learn how to cook. They have to learn how to prepare their own food. They have to learn to recognize what's going into their food. You know, when you have a soup, what that soup is made up of, what the ingredients are, how they affect the healthiness of that soup they're consuming. You know, it's something we've ragged on my daughter, and my daughter now at 14 is a better cook than my wife was when we got married.
My son, for his senior thesis in college, wrote a cookbook for college students on how to eat on a low budget good meals. And what he did was he took 6 months and got recipes from everybody he could think of, and went to the store and priced out the amount it would take to cook meals, and broke it down into, you know, meals, portions, and that's what he wrote his senior thesis on.
That yeah. Sounds fantastic. Where is that available anywhere?
I can probably get you a copy of it, Klaatu.
I'd be really interested in that. Sorry, go ahead.
When I started cooking, our food budget dropped by about $100 a week.
I was going to say, when you mentioned that, Art, I mean, it sounds really good, and I'd like to see it too, but am I the only one here that hates recipes? I really hate recipes. I love cooking, but I hate recipes.
Gosh, no. I'm horrible in the kitchen without a recipe. I cannot improvise. I've tried. Cannot do it. Have to do everything in a recipe exactly to the letter, or it will fail.
Oh, and you use, like, measuring cups and spoons and stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've seen people, I know, people can go in there and they like put a dash of this and a pinch of that. Me, I have no concept of any of those things. I will ruin a dish that way.
No, my wife does the exact same thing. I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing at the similarity that my wife does the exact same thing. And it usually comes out really good. I actually cannot complain about her cooking ever. But, you know, every once in a while, she'll try to make something that I normally make, and it won't taste quite right. And I'll just say, well, why didn't you add a little of this? Or why didn't you add a little of that? And she's like, well, I didn't have a recipe.
Yeah, I could draw the exact same parallel between me and my wife in that, you know, I cook about 60 to 70% of the meals for our family. And she's actually a really good cook, but she's very methodical. She likes to have a recipe. She doesn't like to go off script, you know, and I'm more of a throw this in, throw that in.
I created more good meals by just throwing stuff together. Of course, I've wrecked a few, but I've created a lot of good stuff by just throwing things together from the refrigerator.
Welcome, Peter 64.
G'day.
How's it going?
Hey, Peter.
Hey, where am I now? Am I still in the lounge or am I gone somewhere else?
No, you're in the room, buddy.
I dragged you in. Got sick of seeing you in the lounge.
You're still at the bottom of the earth.
Yeah, Happy New Year, fellas, too. Although, Al, you finished 14 hours ago, or whatever it was, 15 hours ago.
Yeah, cheers, man.
Yeah.
We wish you a good New Year.
You know, now
I didn't get any of that.
Well, now we can start the Australian jokes again, right?
Gee, Sandy, I hope they've gotten bloody better than the ones you were telling last night.
And that's how you know they were actually really good, because Peter hated them.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, Australians, the opposite to hate is love.
Why do you hate Jude so much, Peter?
Yeah, I just hated the death part. Actually, I just said in the chat, Klaatu, my wife, and this really surprised me, keeps saying to me, we have to get back for another Linux Fest, Peter. She had such a blast. There was no doubt I was going to enjoy it, but I really cannot believe how much fun she had and how much she still talks about it.
Don't question that. Funny. Run with it.
Yeah, that's really. Right.
Yeah, really.
Definitely.
Yeah, book some tickets, man.
Look, honestly, we would come back again this year if we could, but we decided we might just spend a bit of time at home and do stuff around the house.
Well, you've only got one choice left to you then, Peter. You're going to have to head up the Australian Linux Fest.
Yeah, I know.
I think it's more the people rather than what it is all about. I mean, it could be about anything. It's just the people are happen to be that cool, you know, that she's happened to grok onto and you know, have such a good time with, that she wants to spend more time with the same people, you know. I reckon that's what it is.
Actually, I'd agree with that. Every Linux Fest or LUG, you know, it's getting together with friends, other Linux friends, and it's your people.
Yeah, imagine that. People who like freedom and openness are all pretty cool.
Yeah, I must admit that, like, Linux in general bores the shit out of me, but I really enjoyed just getting over there and having a drink with everybody. And that's exactly right. It was just a, you know, being with friends. And it was just like I knew everyone there. Although, really, I never, ever met them, but, you know, I've been talking to them for years now.
LUG is good. I got a local one, but I knew about it since like 2009. Started going what's now last year, 2012, right? And yeah, it's just a pub meeting and stuff, and it's quite nice. But unfortunately, it seems it's kind of dying out. A lot of people on the mailing list, but the meetings themselves, there's hardly anyone coming. And it's a shame, really. But yeah. But it's nice going to that kind of thing, and the events as well. Went to some, what's again, last year now, 2012, the open source Linux events for the first time. So FOSDEM and Old Camp 12 I went to as well, and that was all right, yeah. But it's nice going to stuff like that, yeah.
Well, even just this right here, you know, these hanging out with you guys in the Mumble chat right now, I cannot imagine having a better time than with the guys I'm with right now.
Yeah, I think the same. It's good, this.
Thanks.
Oh, and I was going to say, that's a weak imagination.
Well, it makes me feel
just
good.
Just kidding.
And, Parky, you mentioned before, you know, about organizing an Australian one. And, honest to God, I'd have one next weekend if I knew, you know, like Crayon and Stars and Baz and Will were going to turn up, you know. And all you blokes fly over. Shit, I'd have it right here and put you all up in the house. We could all fit, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, you could fly him into the helipad, Peter.
Yeah, they've only got to check it out on OpenStreetMap, and I'll see it.
Be careful what you wish for.
Peter, I don't think your quadcopter would handle me.
No, I'd have to put a couple more props on it for you.
Yeah,
it would definitely not handle me. I'm not a little fella.
Me neither.
And me neither, so there's three or four of us that it wouldn't be able to handle.
What were you about to say, Klaatu? Do you still remember?
No, I don't remember almost anything.
Okay, and Andawara Hanarahara, you got to switch to push to talk, please.
But the feedback is so cool sounding.
Echo. Oh, now he's muted.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, let me know when you're off push to talk, and I'll unmute you again. It's in the configuration menu, and do you have to click the advanced tab to do that, I think?
If you need help, we can duck out into the lounge. I'd be happy to walk you through it.
All right, I'll do that. I'll move him out there, him or her.
Yeah, Peter, you have to get back over here, because I don't think it's going to actually happen that a bunch of us would get there. I'd love to get there. My wife wants to go meet you.
Yeah, no, I mean, as much a great time we have in meeting everyone, but it was disappointing. There was a lot of people I would have loved to have got around to see, and of course you're one of them. Pokey, of course, you know, I did get to talk to Pokey on the phone, but that's not the same. And Jesse James, you know, I would have loved to get up there and see Jesse James.
It's just too big here, man. I have to drive probably 45 minutes just to meet one other guy I know.
Peter, did you get to meet Claudio, too?
No, I didn't get to meet Claudio, unfortunately. I mean, there was a whole list, obviously, that I didn't get to see.
Where was that? What are you talking about? I missed that.
Southeast Linux Fest.
Oh, okay.
I would really love to go to Australia.
Oh, I would, too.
Well, Pipe Man, there's always a bloody room, and if you get over this way, I'll take for a fish on the river.
Careful what you wish for. I'll show up.
Yeah, then
I'll be there on my skivvies on your front door.
Yeah, then it's ConF AU is going to be quite good.
Yeah, Peter, what would you do if he showed up in his thongs?
I just asked him to take them off at the door because we don't allow shoes in the house. So.
Right on.
I assure you, I have no thong.
Well, I'm from South Carolina. I ain't got no shoes.
Yeah, don't worry. I have more bloody shoes very often since I left work either.
Just think of all the recording you're going to have for riding in your mower, though, Peter.
Yeah, actually, I've already thought of that. It should give me quite a few hours entertainment.
Well, it'll give you a few hours of audio, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So, I tell you, you've discussed how it's going out poking.
How the podcast is going to go out?
Yeah, like, you'll break it. Obviously not into... It'll be more time-specific than subject-specific, I'd imagine, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, last year, I just broke it off wherever it was kind of... you know, wherever there was a little pause or a subject change or something. But this year we've kind of intentionally stopped to say Happy New Year on the top of the hour. So we can probably break it off in 3-hour segments for, you know, 8 or 9 shows.
Yeah, that's pretty smart.
Content is content. Quality doesn't matter.
Yeah, Peter, you're going to have a lot to listen to.
Yeah, I've said it before. When you sit on a bloody mower for 7 hours a day, you listen to any shit. And enjoy most of it, too.
Well, you'll have your fill of it, then.
What was the turnout like? You remember, right back at the start of this HPR New Year special, what was the turnout like? Because I remember looking at the Linux Basics site, and it's got a little widget on the sidebar showing who's in the channel. And I remember looking, like, not long after it started, and there's lots of people on the channel. I was like, oh... Okay, there's a lot of people hanging out there. I don't know how many people are talking, but there's a lot of people there.
It's been strong from the beginning. I got here at 7, and I guess they'd already been going for a little while, and there were a lot of people in there, like 20, almost 20 people, I thought, but not all of them were talking. Like 7 or 8 people were talking.
Yeah, and like there's got to be like 20 or 30 more people than last year.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, easily. Yeah, I got up. I thought I was up early and walked in here and looked and like, oh my gosh, are people already online and talking and they're recording too?
Yeah, there's easily been twice as many active talkers this year as last year and for twice as long.
Yeah, that was certainly my concern. I mean, I knew I wasn't going to be on until like close to midnight UK time. But I was always, when I was pimping it on like the Bugcast and on Crivens, I was always sort of conscious of the fact that it was important that people were there right from the start, which would be like lunchtime UK time, because the last thing you want to do is turn up and say, oh, Happy New Year, and there's no bugger about. There's no one about, and you think, well, sod this, I'll leave then. I'm not going to sit hanging around in a room on my own, you know. So I was always conscious of the fact that you've got to start it off and have a few people there, even right from the very start. You've got to have people there to at least start the conversation, to entice people in. You know, it's almost like a busker leaving a few bucks in their hat, you know, to encourage people to chuck a few bucks in, you know.
Yeah, Cribbins, that's how I found out about, really, because I was catching up on an episode. And I was around before it started a bit, but I'd already been awake quite a while, and so I wanted to make sure I got some few hours sleep and so on, but yeah, and I'll probably be around until the end, so.
Well, I think people who were around last year, I appeared on bits and pieces of it, like 3 or 4 hours maybe of it last year, and it was fantastic last year. That's why I was sort of keen to share the experience, you know. People who are around this year, join in, you know, at some point join in. That was my whole gig over with Cribbins over the last 2 or 3 episodes, you know, like, join in, you know, it'll be a laugh.
So, Pete, if you had any, like, special guests on, like, you had the blokes from, Bloke and Lady, is it, from Crunch Spring last year?
Yeah, we can't tell you. You're going to have to listen to the podcast.
Yeah, that's a good nice. Point, too. I can guarantee you I won't miss a minute of it.
Yeah, you should have been here.
There's been quite a few famous people.
Peter, the answer to your question is yes.
Or infamous people. Yeah. Jeff didn't join you from Barry Lynch by any chance, did he?
No, but Barack Obama did. He sort of clipped out of the whole organizing the fiscal cliff in the Senate and decided, you know what, I've got to join in the HPR New Year thing. And he joined in for a little while and then disappeared again, you know, back to work, you know.
I can tell you we've had mentions of Angelina Jolie, RMS, Miguel de Acasa, all kinds of people like that.
Brad Pitt.
Yep, we mentioned him.
Keanu Reeves was bad. You
Keanu Reeves. Yeah.
All right. Hell yeah, Keanu Reeves.
Oh, hey guys, we got a Happy New Year's coming up. It's less than a minute here, and thank you for reminding me in the chat room. Looks like Windcaller. Thanks, man. We got Bolivia, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, and looks like Nova Scotia and Halifax in Canada. So Happy New Year's.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Feliz Año Nuevo. Is that right?
Not for Canada,
you scumbag. I was just trying to think of that. How to do that in Spanish or Portuguese. You scumbag, you beat me to it.
Well, it's inappropriate for Canada, I guess.
But,
I only think Canada is sort of like 5 to 6 to 7 hours behind the UK, but there's like an island or somewhere where it's less than that, so yeah.
Well, even the French speaking part of Canada, isn't that the other side of Canada?
No, that's the side.
No, that's what's coming up in a few minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, they'll they'll hit New Year's same time New York does.
Yeah, Quebec City.
Right, okay.
Quebec City is one of the most beautiful places
Quebec,
I've ever been.
French Montreal, yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. That's my time zone. Oh, no, it's not. In an hour. Okay.
Yeah, in an hour. You're in the next one.
Just less than an hour.
Oh, okay.
I'd be willing to bet anyone in the room, and I'll give you odds, that not Klaatu has never been called a scumbag before.
That's got to be a first.
Yeah, as he suddenly realized, oh, there's a clock there. What does that do?
You can join us in 2013 soon. And it's okay, the world's still here and so on.
I can't wait.
Ooh, getting scared.
You see, I think Klaatu is having problems figuring out his clocks. Is that binary clock now?
No, I just didn't really look that carefully.
I've been quite interested in this Google Nexus 4, and I've watched a review of Chris Prillo, I think it is. I think the good dude's name is. When he's comparing it against like an iPhone 5, I think. And in the background of his video, there's like a binary clock. I don't know. I don't know if it's binary. It's something. It's a bizarre looking clock. It's like, how the hell does he tell the time in that? Is that just a geeky thing, or can he actually look at that and glance at that and tell what time it is?
If it's a binary clock, he can probably glance at it. The binary clock I first started using was what I think of as a normal one, but then I guess they started coming out with a binary clock that reads horizontally instead of in vertical columns. And that one I can't glance at because I don't use that actively.
I had no idea how to read one of them until I listened to an episode of the GNU World Order, Klaatu.
I know. I share my knowledge. I figured that stuff out too. I didn't even have to look at a tutorial. I just figured out the binary clock. I was pretty excited about that.
I had a binary clock on the front of my Rockbox running on a little Sansa.
Oh, that's cool.
E200, and I had a binary clock that would come up on the front of that.
Yeah, I think I'm quite advanced. I switch everything over to the 24-hour clock. It's the very first thing I do when I install something. So right now I'm 0400 hours and 3 minutes, and I even showed the seconds as well, like 18, 19, 20 seconds. Yeah, I cannot grok my head round the binary clock. It just baffles me completely.
I thought Europe used the 24-hour clock by default, or
no,
do they?
No, dude, no. It's a 12-hour clock normally. 24-hour is military time, and I have no connection at all with the military. Honestly, the only reason that I use the 24-hour clock is that once, and I kid you not, once, true story, once I woke up and realized, oh shit, I'm late for the bus to get to work. And I threw my clothes on and run out the door, run up to the bus stop, and stood and waited at the bus stop. And then I realised, like, 20 past 8, 25 past 8, 8:30. Hang on a minute. If I missed that bus, I must have missed the bus. And then I thought, so I glanced along the road and I could see, like, little shops. They should be open. Why are they not open? Like, news agents and things like that. Why are they not open? And then I looked.
Operator
error. Bill, it was 20 past 8 at night in the evening. And I got the whole 12-hour clock flipped around. And it was from, I kid you not, from that day onward, I switched over to 24-hour clock. So that I knew 2000 hours, I don't need to get to work. 0800 hours, I've missed the bus.
It just makes more sense. I mean, I grew up with it, but still, the 24-hour clock makes more sense than 2 12 hours. It makes no sense. And it is much more prone to confusion.
The 24-hour clock, I think, the UK, really uses both, or can use both. So AM and PM or the 24-hour clock. But on top of that, when you're teaching children the time, you might be like, okay, it's 10 to 4, or it's 4 o'clock, or it's 4:30, and all that. So there's like 3 different time things, and then in English or in the UK, we go 4:30 and so on. But let's take Sweden for example. I'm half Swedish as well, so I know this. When they say the time, instead of saying past the hour, so it's they say to the hour, so it's like, so they say like 3. Yeah, they say like the opposite way to us. So let's hang on, let me think a second. Right, I think getting this right. So to say 3:30, or what we would sort of say 3:30, they mean 2:04, not past 4. So there's that as well.
I always think of this story. It was a caller on a radio show that I heard. He called in, and the guy said he was in line at the doctor's office behind a young girl who came in, and the woman was telling the girl, "I'm sorry, you've missed your appointment." And the girl says, "What do you mean I've missed my appointment? You said I made it for 11:15. It's only 11:20. And the lady says, "Honey, 11:15 is 15 minutes past." And she says, "No, 4:15. And as far as I could tell, the man was telling a true story. He was not making a joke.
I believe that, too.
Oh, I don't get it.
I mean, the confusion I had was someone said 2, and I thought they said 10 or something like that. So I showed up to my schedule at work, like my shift at work, like, 4 hours ahead of time. Not that I needed to be convinced because I was already using it, but that just kind of drove it home as to how prone to mistake the 12-hour thing was.
Yeah, for me, see, the thing is, I mean, as much as I have, I used to have a digital watch, and that was 24-hour clock as well. My netbook, my laptop, everything I do is 24-hour clock, but even then I can look at that. I look at, say, 1900 hours, and I don't say 1900, I say 7 o'clock, as I automatically translate it, but I see on the screen, I see it as 24-hour clock, and I don't, it's just bizarre. I mean, as I say, from that day, from getting the, waking up and making a balls up with the bus, that was my day, switched over to 24-hour clock.
So what, is it ever as dark? I mean, didn't you notice that it was dark, or does it stay dark longer?
Some time of the year it does. I mean, a lot of the time it doesn't, but I think that might have been one of the times of the year where, it genuinely does, and you really don't know. I only found out the time of the light and conditions, you wouldn't know. You really wouldn't know. Sitting waiting on the bus, and it feels like that time of morning. It's like autumn or something. Probably autumn, or fall, as you guys call it. You wouldn't know. It's when you're looking and waiting on the bus, and the bus isn't coming, and it's due to come, and it's like, it's not coming. Why is it not coming? Is it late? I need to. If I missed the bus, I'm sure I've missed the bus. Bollocks! I'm going to be in trouble with the work again. I've been late again. Not again. And looking down the schedules on the bus stop for when the next bus is, and the next bus sort of turning up, and you're sort of waiting and waiting and waiting. And you don't know. by the lighting, you really don't know. So, yeah, I think if it had happened another time of year, I'd probably got away with it, but it just so happened that was round about the time of year where you really couldn't tell.
Yeah, sometimes, especially at this time of year, it's like, you know, it gets dark so early, like 4 o'clock to, I don't know, it gets light about 8, and it's just, you know, it's like the morning, the early morning is the same as the evening is the same as the slightly later morning, and it's, and yeah.
Well, the only thing that triggered me was glancing along the street and finding the usual sort of lights from the shops, like the newsagent and stuff like that. They would normally be open at that time in the morning. They'd have been open like for a good hour and a half with the papers and the rolls and the milk and all that. Even they were shut. That was the thing that triggered me to sort of wonder, hang on a minute, what time is this? And sort of looking along the road, going, well, they should be open. They really should be open. They can't all be late. Surely they can't all be late. And that's what made me sort of trigger to sort of look at it and go, oh, hang on a minute. Actually, this is the wrong section of the 12.
That's a great story, though. That's a fantastic story.
Hey, guys, can I just jump in for a second? Mrs. NY Bill keeps giving me looks because we have a champagne in the fridge and we're going to do the whole New Year's thing, so it's been awesome hanging out with you guys, and I think we're off to the New Year's thing.
Yeah, okay.
Happy New Year.
Alright, cool guys, see ya.
Happy yeah, you too, man. Great hanging with you too.
Hey guys, am I late to the party?
No, it's
just in time, really.
Horribly late. We were waiting on you turning up before we started partying. Seriously. No, I'm kidding.
You missed the first piece, and now you have to buy your own.
Just under 8 hours left of the party, this one. So I think you're okay.
Yeah, and no, the thing is, with these stories, like, yeah, it's a good story. Unfortunately, yes, that particular one, that happened to me. That wasn't made up. That happened to me. So, yeah, good times.
Happy
New Year. That's especially true for Scotsman.
Well, yeah, as I say, you learn from your mistakes from that day onwards. I adopted the 24-hour clock with abandon. I switched everything to a 24-hour clock just so that it wouldn't happen again.
Again, I say Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Where are you? Are you actually in a New Year time zone?
No, this is Gorkin. I usually use W3RAZ over here because this is where Tracy Holtz and I plan to use this to record our new amateur radio podcast.
Very cool. I look forward to it if it ever happens. How long has it been in the planning stages?
Well, we had episode 1 actually recorded. However, between the time we recorded episode 1 and, well, it still hasn't been posted yet, but since we recorded that, Tracy has now changed his call sign to N5UNX.
Joel, I'm a bit disappointed. Aren't you Whiskey 3 Romeo Alpha Zulu? What's this bloody W3RAZ? That sounds like you're a bit of a noob to all this stuff.
No, you can say it either way.
No, you can't. You've got to say it proper,
yes,
doesn't he?
Well, you use International Phonetics, yes. The Whiskey 3 Romeo Alpha Zulu.
I'm not going to type out Kilo Tango 4 Kilo Bravo.
I've done Peter, that in chat. I've typed that to you.
And Peter, who you call a cunt?
Yeah. Remember, it's said for saying, or it's made for saying, not typing.
That's the truth.
Correct.
Well, some people just end up calling me KT, and if you saw a picture of me, I don't look like no KT.
Or whatever, Katie.
So anyway, hopefully when that will kick off in the new year sometime soon. We'll see.
I told you this once, but I'll say it publicly. I really enjoyed that Hacker Public Radio on the, you know, that you did, like, on ham, on, like, very beginning ham. I think it was basically on a handset that you had, but it was really informative.
Yep. And I'm a freedom hater because I have a D-Star radio, I guess. But the main problem with D-Star, for those who don't know, A D-STAR stands for Digital Smart Technology for Amateur Radio. It's essentially a voice over IP technology for ham radio. And the way ICOM and the Japanese Amateur Radio League, they developed it together. They used a codec by the name codec. It's actually a chip as well as a codec called AMBE, and that is a copyright held chip. It's you actually have to pay licensing fees in order to use that in a radio.
Wow.
Yeah, it sucks much, but there's something new on the horizon. I've been playing with it.
Yeah, there's Codec 2 coming.
Yes, and it looks good to me.
Plus, and there's also Yaesu has some stuff. Is it FTDM? I can't remember. It's that they're in the development stages. They have not yet been FCC typed accepted. For those in America, the FCC or Federal Communications Commission has to approve all radios that are sold for amateur use here in the States. Now, this doesn't include if you build your own, of course.
I was going to mention that.
Just a quick official thing for people who can't see. On Mumble on the netbook, I've just about, it's like one little flick of the finger, just enough on the scroll wheel, just enough to see all the names in the channel at one time. There's just few enough that it almost just about quite fits on the same screen at the one time. All we need is a couple of people to fuck off, and it'll appear on the same team same screen at the same time.
Yeah, change your theme.
Yeah.
Are you trying to tell some of us to bugger off? Scarper!
No, I'm just having a laugh. I'm just saying, I'm on the netbook, on Mumble on the netbook, and I'm maximized, and I can't quite see all the names on the channel at the same time. I can't just quite see them. And it's like, all it needs is like one nudge of the scroll wheel, and I can move up and see the top of the name, and then one nudge and I see it all at the bottom. And it's just so close. That's quite unusual for tonight. So I'm just saying, I'm just having a laugh, basically.
Hey, this is a web. Don't ask for a Linux Cranks vote kick, because I'm afraid to ask for one. I don't know.
I just wanted to say that name, W3 Vaz, did I pronounce that right? Yeah, I think so. Made me think of W3C, or W3 for short as well. Worldwide Web Consortium, Tim Berners-Lee, Web Standards, and all that, yeah.
I was going to say, I thought you were going to say Wares, because it kind of does look like that too.
That's what I thought when I first saw it, actually, Wares.
That's exactly what I thought when I first saw it, and it reminded me of the Stank Dog story about Juarez. So it reminded me to email him and bug him to come on the show.
That's so funny that you remember that story. Where did we hear that? How did we both, I mean, I'm sure it was on maybe Bin Rev, or was it something he talked about on HBR?
No, I think I've said this before, but I think the day I found BinRev and added it to my podcatcher was the very last BinRev show, and I sat there and listened to the whole thing, and I think he told the story that he must have told it there, because it was the only one I heard. I didn't go back.
Yeah, that was one of my first episodes of any podcast as well. I remember that one well. It was 7 hours or something. It was great.
Wow. And to think that I complain about Dev Random being like 3 hours long.
Yeah, well, this was their big final like goodbye of the BinRev Radio. So they were doing a retrospective of everything they'd ever done. So they had all these hosts on, reviewed every episode they did. It was really good.
Oh, you want an episode like that? Just bring on Jason Scott. Trust me, you can make it 7 episodes.
Yeah.
So yeah, Stank Dog, if you're listening on the stream, come on, man. We'd really love it if you'd come on. We'd love to talk to you. This is your baby, and she needs your approval.
Yeah, get that Stank Dog in here.
Anywho, another thing that Aunt Tracy and I have been kind of bandying about is a somewhat daily show, like a news, kind of like Tech News Today, but not, you know, strictly. Not strict as they are, you know. I don't know. I don't know if we could actually do it every day. It'd be more or less once a week, but, you know.
Not exactly today.
Yeah, that sounds like an Australian Today. The Australian News Today show once a week.
Yeah, fuck those other 6 days.
Yeah, and what's it about tomorrow's news, Peter?
I would love to fuck those other 6 days.
Yeah, I still need to get my episode in.
Yeah, I actually got my D-Star rig on right now, and if you can... There's a little bit of it there. Whatever station is in there. See, that's the thing with D-Star. It's you're either in there or you're not. There's no selective fading like you have an analog.
If we're talking ham radios, I have a ham radio question, and it's probably a pretty stupid one, so feel free to laugh. But are the words amateur and hamateur synonymous, or is there actually a distinction there?
Actually, the... Hold on a second, I'm being paged.
Anybody?
You make it sound so enticing. Overall, they're usually used in the same ways.
Amateur is just a vegetarian amateur.
Nice.
Well, there is a difference, but it's not much.
Well, that was the best most vegetarians are just amateurs.
No offense, Klaatu.
Wait, say it again, John Doe?
I've got to credit the booze on that one.
Most vegetarians are amateurs.
Oh, I get it. So the words are actually synonymous and interchangeable, and you wouldn't get marked wrong on a test for using one over the other.
I don't believe that's on the test, although you can check.
No, I'm not saying that it is. I just mean if it were, you know, how, I don't know. I'm just wondering if there's any difference at all.
Are you disclosing that you have inside information on what's going to be on the next FCC licensing test?
It's public information.
Yeah, it's all public
information.
Then he does.
Wow. And so do you.
That was some good detectiving there, Klaatu.
Right.
Yeah,
all right.
Right. A little funny on the subject of booze. I've been keeping mentioning there's something... I love Terry Pratchett. I love Discworld. And I've been keeping mentioning this little quote from Discworld.
Wait a minute. Thistleweb, at the same time last year, at the exact same time, probably to the minute, you mentioned the exact same thing.
I think you're right.
Wrong. I am totally right about this.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, Klaatu.
He's just playing it back from last year.
No,
Is this the thing we talked about earlier, where if you get just as drunk, you can remember the thing you forgot since then?
Yeah. Well, you see, the thing is, I never actually remembered the quote exactly. Oh, there's going about.
Jay Rulo, podcasting from inside of a shopping bag.
Right?
Yeah.
Anyway,
see, thing is, you're right in the Adam. I've been keeping bringing this up, but I could never actually remember the exact quote. I only found out the exact quote like 3 or 4 weeks ago. So this is it. We have had considerably too much of the booze, and you can. The more you have of the booze, you want to have even more of the booze until you falls over, which is when you know you've had too much of the booze. Okay, that was probably too... Yeah, okay.
I think you've had too much of the booze.
I think so, too.
I think it ended like that last year, too, didn't it?
Hey, Klaatu, can we get a soundbite of that so when he starts next year, we just play it at him?
So about this time, he falls onto his activation key and stays keyed up for the rest of the night.
Yeah, snores into the mic.
That's the stare at Thistleweb.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I've been keeping remembering that quote, but I could never actually remember the quote. That was the thing. This time I have actually remembered the quote. That was the point. But the problem is, it wasn't really that. I mean, you've got to understand your audience, and this moment wasn't quite it. So fair.
Well, it was entertaining, but it's such a disjointed use of language. It doesn't really. It's not really worth remembering.
You're right. I've got to agree with you. You're right. I mean, what arsehole thought of that idea? I'll tell you. Should be shot.
Evidently, Terry Pratchett.
And by the way, since I hope I'm not the only one who picked up on it, Gorkon, I love that when you get paged, it's in Morse code.
You might think so, but to answer your question a little bit more completely, amateur radio and ham radio are exactly the same thing, which I think you guys probably determined. But how the term ham radio was applied, actually, there's some lore behind it, just like everything else in ham radio. I am sure amateur. At some point... Huh?
He said amateur.
Well, there's no such word as hamateur. It's ham, H-A-M, or amateur radio.
I swear I've heard people say amateur.
Yeah, that's probably because they're just mushing it together.
And they're not amateurs.
Are these the same people who say human? They took the H off a human and put it on amateur instead?
Or herb.
And or let's say it like the Ferengi, human.
Herbs and spices,
And ham, where does the H come from? What does the H mean?
Well, it's more like ham as in a bad actor, you know? So that's really where it came from. And for some reason it's stuck, I don't know. And that's where the podcast that Tracy and I are going to record, if we ever get around to it, is going to be called the Wolf Hong Podcast. Now, it sounds like a strange thing, but it actually has its roots all the way back to the 30s. And what it was this thing that Hiram Percy Maxim, who was like, he was like the first president of the American Radio Relay League, ARRL. But basically, that's the main lobbying body for amateur radio. Dang it, you got me saying it. but for amateur radio here in the States. And he pulled this out, and it has, basically, it's a very weird-looking tool that could be used on bad operators. Operators have bad operating practices and stuff like that. And it has also, there's another weird kind of a thing called the Ready Snitch. And it's the same kind of thing. And they're both horrific looking devices and you don't want used on yourself. But the Wolf Hong itself was actually handed out at a ARRL national convention. And there's several of them. If you look on eBay, you can probably pick one up for about, I think it's about a couple $100, I think. But it's kind of a strange thing, and that's one of the things we wanted to kind of keep with the show once we, like I said, once we finally launch. We want to bring back some of the old stuff, and of course talk about the new stuff.
Now hams are bad and good. Now radio is bad and good.
Yeah. Oh, and never use 10 codes with an amateur radio operator. They probably would look on you in shame.
10 for really. Here, buddy.
Oh, I've exactly. heard. I've heard 10 codes.
That's how people disappear.
On 75 meters in the last week. And
I'm sure there are some idiots that use it.
How is he getting away with that? And somebody doesn't really just belittle him, but they just kept on going with their conversation.
Strange how he came home to a broken radio. For some reason, it just seems to have cut its own radio cord. It seems to have cut its own antenna cord.
But
what's
the story?
It was 10-4 good buddy stuff, too. I mean, it was right out of the 70s.
Oh, geez, truckers. What's even bad is they won't even call each other good buddy anymore.
He must have had a it's on the tip of my tongue.
Modified
vanity
CB.
Call sign, because it was an old call sign.
No, you break my heart.
Well, with amateur radio, he could have been really that old.
If I ever got into that CB stuff, I'd be watching Smokey and the Bandit. As a demonstration, you know, that's what CB stuff's all about. Smokey and the Bandit. 10-4, good buddy.
Unfortunately, I'm old enough to remember CB radio when it got its start.
Oh, yeah, hey, I got to interrupt here. It is a happy new year for Venezuela because they're on a half an hour. So, happy new year, Venezuela.
Happy New Year!
Yeah. Happy New Year!
And 30 minutes left for us East Coasters.
Yeah, Feliz Año Nuevo!
There you go.
Bro, those people are just very backwards.
Good. Yes, East Coasters, we suck, you know. Hey.
Yeah, but it's not about us right now. It's about Venezuela. Happy New Year's. Venezuela.
Yeah, but Venezuela's backwards. You know, they're all turned around, 180.
But I'm bummed. Wait, I thought that was Australia.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all backwards. They've got this concept called democracy. Yeah. Just saying.
They don't have Fox News.
Just because everybody thinks it's right, don't mean it's right.
Yeah. Meanwhile, back at the ham radio.
Anyway.
Hey, speaking of ham radio, where is Russ? Where is Russ from the ham shack?
Oh, wait, we forgot one.
He's probably liquored up.
We forgot one.
So?
Because Brazil also has a Happy New Year around the same time. So it's Feliz Ano Novo.
Yeah, we did Brazil was half an hour ago.
Yeah, I was going to say
well,
Brazil
part of
was
Brazil,
like an hour ago.
But,
or
other parts of Brazil are not all of Brazil.
Sounded good, though.
Well, I speak English, Spanish, and Portuguese, so.
Yeah, I don't speak any of the three.
Yeah.
I speak sad.
So, the other one.
Hey, guys, quick question. Probably the answer is no, I'm sure, but I want to check anyway. Is there a Mumble client for iPhone?
No.
I don't think so.
Oh, bummer. Okay.
There
thanks.
Is one now. I think there is one now.
Yeah, I thought
something
was
tells
too.
Me it's not a very good one if you've seen the one for Android.
So we've got America next, isn't it? So next full time zones, isn't it? Or is there another one as well? What, Hawaii or whatever? And there's another island? I mean, I don't know.
So why did you have that pokey? Why do you know he's got the iPhone?
Pokey. I don't want to out him. It's not fair.
Come on. You've got to share it with us now.
Do it.
Apparently there is a Mumble client for iOS.
Wow.
And currently it's in beta.
There you go.
Well, I'm sure there was because Nightwise check in earlier?
Yeah, but he was
on a tablet or something.
I thought he said he was on his iPad.
Who's the free operator?
Right. No, he was using his iPad as a cutting board.
That
is true. I did hear that.
I thought you could cut cake with the iPad.
What there needs to be is like a lie detector test on Mumble. So the people that say, oh, apparently there is a Mumble client for such and such, you can sort of detect that, oh, they're full of shit. They're using that very same fucking Mumble client.
No, I figured he just called his iPhone like Android tablet. It was the name of it, so he wouldn't be busted. But it's actually it's Stank Dog. He says he's away from his computer.
You know, actually, that's one of the things I figured out last year. I mean, I'm almost 40. I'll be 40 next year, and I came to the conclusion that there's a lot of people. I mean, I went to a family do. And like my mom and dad's, my dad's birthday, it was like a family meal, and I realised that every single person, there was like 10 of us there, and every single person, I was the only person who cared about software freedom, about Linux or anything like that. Everyone else, there's quite a few of them used Facebook and stuff like that, but not one of them cared. It was like, my niece, I was sitting next to my niece for the whole meal, and she's quite happily using her iPod, you know. And it came to me, the sort of bolt from the blue came to me, like, why are we so fucking hard line on software freedom? I mean, okay, you can promote it, but at the same time, is it really worth losing people over? You know, it's like insisting, oh, they all use Facebook. Do I want to shun all that contact because people insist on using Facebook and I don't want to use Facebook? Not really. Ultimately, at the point, the end point is they are family, you know. I'd sort of join up and use Facebook, and even if I don't use it very much, I use it for them. And you know, I mean, that's when it comes down to the sort of when push comes to shove, you know. Do you really want to be a hardline arsehole, or do you want to just say, well, you know, I would prefer you use such and such, but if you really don't want to, so be it, you know, so be it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, yes, it's nice to have, ideally, having your fam as Linux users, let's say, a lot of us would want, ideally, our families to be using it as well, and our friends or whatever, you know, people we know, I mean, you know, but in reality, most people, they do not care. They just want to just use their computer. They want to go on Facebook, they want to go on whatever, and they're happy using Windows, happy using Mac, they're basically happy using what these for-profit companies are giving them, and that's that, really. I mean, you can try and explain to them why they should switch, or the moral advantages, and all that, but a lot of people aren't really going to understand. And at times, well, yeah, you can lose people as friends or whatever if you push it too much, these, you know, to switch to whatever. And that's how it is, really.
I disagree. I don't think that's true at all. I'm not going to use Facebook and that kind of thing just and give up my freedom because everybody else around me has. I'm just not going to do that. If my family's important to me, I'll keep in contact with them another way. And if I'm important to them, they'll do the same. And I just...
Right.
I don't have enough in common with the things that people use Facebook for to even want to join in that particular activity. You know, I'd rather just see somebody face to face if that's what it takes.
Yeah, my mother came to visit. That's all she had was a Linux machine to work on, even if she did want to go on Facebook.
Yeah, for me, my entire family, my wife, my daughter, we all use Linux here. So, I mean, you know, we don't even bother with stuff like that. But, like, my extended family all use Facebook. Everybody in my extended family all use Facebook. And my wife, you know, uses it to keep in contact with them. But a while back, she set me up an account, and guess what? I never use it. I don't want to mess with it. I feel the same way. I just don't want to give up the freedom, and I don't want to deal with the hassles of Facebook. Before my wife switched over to Linux on her laptop, I saw all the crap she had to go through because, you know, she got infected, and, you know, pop-ups and all kinds of crap because of using Facebook. And I'd rather just not deal with it. If they want to contact me, they'll contact me by phone or by email. If they don't want to contact me, well, that's on them.
Also, yeah, for the record,
wow.
Go ahead.
I don't know. I have a single person that's actually, not saying that it doesn't happen, but I've never seen anyone actually get something from Facebook. Other than clickjacking stuff, which you can get that in a lot of places.
All I'm saying is I've seen my wife's entire Facebook account get hijacked.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying it's normal, but I've seen it happen.
Right. But I don't think this is what Thistleweb was talking about. I mean, there's a difference between just saying, okay, I'm not going to use Facebook, and then going to family functions and being like this jerk who doesn't stop talking about how evil the iPod that they just got for Christmas is, and you know, stuff like that. I mean, it's putting the people before the computers, which is what I think most of us do.
Right, exactly.
Well, yeah, in my case, I don't ever try to force my opinion on any of my family. If they want to use Facebook, that's fine. You know, I don't say a word about it. That's their choice. That's, you know.
But does your family ever get pissed at you because you're not using Facebook?
No. They know I don't use Facebook. They've accepted it.
Yeah, I think that is the difference. It's of saying I'm saying I use Linux. I am proud to use Linux. I am happy to use Linux. If you want to talk to me, if you've got infections on your Windows computer, I'll happily fix it. But I will try to talk you around. I will evangelize open source. I will evangelize the whole concept of open source and free software through the venue of Linux, through Firefox, through LibreOffice, through whatever. There's a difference between saying there's that's the position I hold And taking that to a step further and saying, oh, you use a Mac, you're scum, but you're scum, I don't want to talk to you because you use a Mac. You use Windows, right. you like using Windows, I won't talk to you because you use Windows. You know, that's a whole different thing. It's like accepting people because they are family, because it's putting that ahead, as Klaatu says, it's putting that ahead of the whole software freedom thing, while still advocating the idea that if you ever have problems with your computer, I know what I'm talking about, you know, talk to me and I'll set you up with Linux and I'll show you how to use it and I'll support you and all that. That's fine. It's like an extra thing. That's like, it's not forcing it on them. It's like saying, this is a better way of life, and if you want to join that, you know where I am, sort of thing.
I agree with Thistle Web about that. And Facebook and Twitter, well, somebody mentioned how accounts have been hijacked, and I was thinking MSN over the years, all these, every now and again, the MSN accounts being hijacked, and then spam emails or people's accounts being taken over. But Twitter, again, a few months ago, my older brother's account got hijacked or taken over by something, and he doesn't really know computer stuff that well, and he's whatever, but he basically came to me and said, look, what should I do? My account's been hijacked. And I was like, you change your password, and his girlfriend, right. The same thing happened there, and you know, it's stuff like that. And I mean, I've said to him before, like, look, I use an alternative to Twitter, actually. It's called Identicare. Oh, I do sometimes then on that. Anyway, so, but I remember he came along with me to Old Camp, and we had a talk there, actually, with somebody, and it was mentioned there, I remember that, how basically he sort of said, yeah, okay, Identicare, but all my friends use Twitter, or all my friends use Facebook, and that's the issue right there for a lot of this, what we're talking about. People will use what their friends and their family use. They're not, in general, like us, not going to think, oh, this service, it's from a company, there's all these ads, and it's got some security issues possibly, and, oh, I'm going to look at the alternatives. And, you know, it applies to everything. It applies to software as well. They're going to use Microsoft. They're going to use Apple. They're not going to, in general, they're not going to think, oh, I should switch to, I'm getting viruses in Windows. I mean, my dad is a great example. He's used Windows for a long time. As part, every company he worked for, he used Windows, and he's had viruses on family computers, and he refuses to go and use Linux. And it's just quite simply because that's what he's used to, and everyone else uses it, so he must. And, you know, that's the issue we have. And so, yeah, people right. People do not, you know, people, that's what they care about. They care about what everyone else does. The same thing with celebrities. I personally do not care what all these celebrities are up to. You know, I've got my own life to live. I do not care what the celebrities are up to. I've got my own life to live. I'll repeat that. But the mainstream, the average people, that's what they care about as well. Same kind of thing. They care about what their friends are doing and their family are doing. And, you know, so some of these things are hard sell. You can't sell it. And the same with Linux distributions. You know, it's a hard sell in general, but Ubuntu, I'm going to use Ubuntu example here, they do have a chance of going more mainstream, I believe, because of how they're like, how they're really trying to go mainstream, how's the company behind it, how's money behind it, and you know, how it's commercial, and that has more of a chance of going mainstream, the community distribution such as Mojir, which as some of you have seen, I use Mojir and so on, contribute to it a bit, you know, that's how I see it as well. Mojir is lovely, but I don't see it going all mainstream, right, with the masses, ever. I do see a distribution like Ubuntu having a chance, though.
It's nice also that Netflix is no longer a good excuse since the Compolio version of Wine came out.
I don't count that, but to get onto that subject though, like I don't know how many of you know Beth Lynn from Ohio Linux Fest, you know, she always would ask me, well, why does your wife use Windows? So it's like, well, here's the thing, I love my wife, okay? I'm not going to say you must use Linux. No matter what I tell her, it's not going to make a difference. I'd rather stay married to my wife than force Linux on her. So I can't do that. I do have a rule, though. There's only two sets of people that I will support Windows for. One is work, because, hey, they pay me. Two is family, and that's it. If somebody at church asks me, I'll probably help them too, I guess. So three people. Three categories of people.
See, you suffer from the same thing that a lot of us do. Yeah, you suffer from probably what a lot of us suffer from, and that is that we're pretty decent people, you know? We're like nice people. So even though you're like, I'm not going to help people with Windows, it's like, well, if you ask me, I probably will, because I'm a nice guy.
But what would Windows be, Klaatu, if there weren't people? I was thinking of this just the other day, actually. Where would Windows be if there weren't people like us? Because every family must know someone like us.
Right, and, yeah.
You know, and just to take your bloody machine into a shop these days and say, okay, my Windows machine won't boot, which happens, let's say, every 6 months, being generous, how much money would people have to spend to get their computers fixed?
I'm pretty sure there's a technical term for us, and it's called enablers.
No, well, I'll tell you what.
Very
true,
but if we didn't do it, we'd be Apple.
My friends who appreciate my help with computers all use Linux.
I'll give you one better than that, Peter. Where would Windows... Bear in mind, I'm now drunk. I will officially class it as inebriated, but to say kindly, I'll say I'm drunk. So, but just keep that in mind. Where would Windows be if it wasn't for the antivirus and the anti-malware companies? If you buy... imagine the scenario. If you bought a Windows machine... Yeah, sorry. If you bought a Windows machine and it didn't have a free trial of McAfee or Norton or something on it, where would Windows be?
It'd be in the same place, Thistleweb. You're going down a dead-end road here, because every Windows computer comes with a 60-day free trial of antivirus, and every Windows computer has an expired antivirus on it.
You know what I really hate, too, is when people come to me and say, I hate my computer. It's always playing up. And I say, now, hold on. One thing you have to understand is that laptop or computer is exactly the same way it came out of the shop. What's playing up is that convoluted piece of shit that you use for an operating system. That's playing up. Now, if you put a decent operating system on that machine, it would be fine, and it would run for years and years and years, and you'd never have a trouble with it.
And they ignore you.
That's not true, Peter. I don't see that true. If Linux becomes as popular as Windows is today, guess what the hell we're going to have? Malware and viruses. It's going to find another way to get them in.
Right.
But isn't it a lot more secure? Like, my understanding is this whole secure operating system.
Peter, your password is 1234. How can that be more secure?
And I tell you what, Pikey, it served me
He has a password now? When did this happen?
He upgraded.
It's you and Sandy rubbing it in all the time, so I thought I'd better at least put 1-2 on there.
I was going to just jump in here for a second. I don't really consider myself an enabler in that regard, because anyone outside of my family knows that I do computer repair as a side business, so they have to pay me to work on their Windows machine.
Oh, well, so you're a fiddler.
Yeah, that's good.
As far as family, like I said, my immediate family all use Linux, and the rest of my family is far enough away that if they wanted me to fix their computers, they'd have to ship it to me, so it's much easier to find someplace locally to do it.
Don't tempt. I've had them do it.
You know, I think what doesn't help here is the fact that PC is generally it's the name for Windows PC. I mean, PC, as we all know, stands for personal computer. It's nothing to do with which operating system it is that's on it. But as far as the world's media, as far as the world is concerned, PC means Windows PC. I think that doesn't really help.
Well, that goes back to the root of the original operating system.
Crap.
Well, that goes back to the really original operating system, which was called PC-DOS. Not MS-DOS, PC-DOS. And it was later when Microsoft kind of pushed in on the DOS area that they kind of co-opted the PC name from IBM.
No, right. No, that the PC-DOS was the IBM. And MS-DOS was when it broke free.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't help when you hear like news reports saying, oh, a PC virus caused such and such. It's not a fucking PC virus, it's a fucking Windows virus. Get your fucking journalism straight.
Well, I'm still struggling with that terminology, actually, because I grew up thinking PCs right. were Windows, so I'm still, yeah, I still catch myself thinking and saying that.
The thing is, they don't know and they don't care. To give you an idea, I was talking with my mom. I said, why don't you get Comcast? Because their connection's going to be faster than your DSL connection. And she goes, oh, no, I won't do that because your brother has that, and their internet's always so slow over there. I said, it's probably because the kids and the rest of his family, you know, my brother's the type that when their computer gets too messed up, rather than actually fix the computer and get rid of the viruses and other stuff, they just go out and buy a new computer. And, you know, and
what's
my mom
his address
also,
and does he lock his trash can?
Yeah. And my mom also has the invalid assumption that, well, since you're, you know, if somebody's watching TV at the same time as you're using the internet, then the internet's going to be slower. And I'm like, no, it doesn't work that way, Mom. Well,
you know,
it actually
works that way for me. If I'm watching TV, my internet is my TV is streamed over my internet, so
right.
it actually affects me.
Right, but you have a unique situation. You have probably AT&T, right?
No, actually, I'm up in Canada. I got fiber.
Oh, okay. See, well, it's the same concept. AT&T's UVerse is the same thing because you basically stream your TV. Over the same connection. In fact, your cable box is also your cable modem, I believe, on AT&T UVerse.
Yeah, the way it works for anybody that's on fiber who gets TV service through fiber is your fiber is IPTV, and so that actually applies to them. Like, if somebody's watching TV, your internet's going to be slower.
That is a rare case, though. Most people who have cable service would not be affected at the same time.
Yeah, that's not cable. That's fiber.
Right.
Like my connection speed, I've got 80 megabits per second down and 30 megabits per second up. I've got a very decent connection.
Oh, well, wow. See, I've never met anybody that had a faster connection than me. I've got 75 over 50.
You know what they say about quality fiber? It keeps you regular.
Dude, they got somebody, they got a couple people up here who have 225 megabits down and 100 megabits up.
I got a fiber in the bathroom.
Now I never leave.
Yeah. All I'm saying is if Google Fiber enters Columbus, I'm there.
Uh-huh.
For many reasons. I don't care.
Are you kidding me? The moment Google Fiber comes to the D.C. Baltimore area,
yeah, I mean,
you'll never leave
your
room.
It's not only is it cheaper, you know, you get all the other stuff. I mean, dude, you get a Nexus 7, and yeah, I know. You know,
in a way,
there's
it's
just
Gmail all over again.
Yeah, exactly. Really, but it's the future. These cable companies are just charging too much for this.
So, on the Google thing, what do we all make of the whole Nexus 4 supply and demand debacle?
Yeah.
I'll tell you this much, I got a Nexus 4, and I made a buttload of money off of it.
Yeah, the Nexus 4, I looked at that and thought, So the thing is, I mean, Google can't possibly look at that and go, it's an unlocked Android phone, you know, pure Nexus, pure Google phone, and it's mutual cheap compared to like the rest of the top of the line phones. There's no contract. It's all unlocked. Everything's unlocked. Oh, that can't possibly be popular, you know, for ordering stock. And then suddenly surprised to find that the fucking thing sells out.
Yeah.
Well, I think they were just thinking that only Android developers were going to be the ones buying it. And I'm like, yeah, somebody goofed on that one.
Well, sometimes it comes down to just what parts are in it, what chips are available for each production run. It's not necessarily they didn't order. It's just each production run, there's only so many pieces and parts on hand.
I don't believe that for a second. I mean, they've never had issues with, not Google, but I mean, other companies don't have issues with finding enough parts for their phones.
The iPhone. No,
they must have some vague idea through market rate. I mean, bear in mind, this is Google we're talking about. This is the company who sole existence is about
artificial scarcity rules.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously, well, I mean, right?
This is the company who exists because of analytics, because of analyzing people's traffic and people's interest in various things. They know what people want, you know, and they tailor that into searches. They tailor that into lots of things. They tailor that and make it available to webmasters. They know what people want. They can't possibly be surprised at the possible interest. Oh, people might actually want an unlocked phone at fucking good prices. They can't possibly be surprised at that. Surely, it's Google we're talking about here.
Google doesn't always get it right, though, on their information.
That's true. A lot of people don't remember that Google makes a lot of mistakes along the way. It has made a lot of mistakes along the way. The difference is they learn from their mistakes and move on.
I've heard it said different times about different things that market research can sometimes be kind of harmful to a product because people will tell you what they think they want, and they're often wrong.
Yeah, I have heard actually some companies who all their market research points them to, this product's going to sell out X amount of units in X amount of time, and then they make enough for that. And then they find out that they've got plenty of stock left and no one wants to buy it. And it was like overstocked. So I get the whole thing. I mean, I think the PS2, I think it was accused of, the Sony PS2 was accused of not having anywhere near enough stock to meet the demand deliberately to say that, oh, sold out here, sold out there, everywhere, sold out everywhere, you know?
30 here seconds to go.
Almost New Year's here in the East Coast.
All right. It's not just the East Coast, but we got Bahamas, Peru, Colombia, Cuba, Jamaica, the Eastern time zone in the USA, and do they call it the Eastern time zone in Canada? I'm not sure if they call it the
Canada,
same time zone.
Yep.
Happy New Year.
But in Canada and US, the Eastern time zones.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Happy New Year, East Coast.
Do I set my clock forward an hour or back an hour? I forget.
or as Epicana says, happy arbitrary division of the year in Eastern Standard Time, everybody.
Yay.
Welcome to 2013. I think that's all of us in now, isn't it?
What does he mean arbitrary division of the year? I thought it was the rotation of the Earth around the sun.
Yes.
Yeah, but when it starts and stops is arbitrary.
Yeah, the actual measurement of time is somewhat arbitrary.
Oh, right, I got you.
What do you mean rotate? The Earth is flat. Don't you know that? The Earth is flat. The Earth has always been flat.
I meant rolling.
Rolling? What's this rolling stuff? The Earth has been flat.
It's a ring world. What are you talking about?
No, it's on the back of a damn turtle and, like, elephants.
Now you're talking. See, that's the kind of language I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about.
And it's spinning around.
That's what I grok on the back of a turtle on the back of four elephants. That's what I grok. Your great Arthurian. That's what I grok.
But is great Arthurian male or female? We really need to know that.
Apparently, it's male. I believe great Arthurian's male, but I could be wrong.
Boy, I hope so.
Is anyone who's still chatting at the moment still in 2012 or not?
I am.
I am. I'm in the next time zone.
At this point, I don't care. I just find someone with a Discworld reference, so I'm rolling with that.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's still three more time zones to go for the U.S.
Hey, I'm Mountain Standard.
Yeah, I said something like
I'm
that.
I'm Mountain Standard time here.
Yeah, I'm Mountain Standard.
More like four.
Two more.
Well, yeah, four because of Hawaii.
There's like seven time zones in the U.S.
What?
Oh, you're smoking something, dude.
If you go all the way to the edge of Alaska, there's like seven or eight.
Oh, yeah. Times Square brought to you by Nivea. Yay, yay.
Seven or eight?
I think you'd have to count Guam and Hawaii.
Yeah, I was going to say Hawaii, so that makes five. Seven! What?
Guam's already over. They're already... Yeah, they switched with Japan.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean they're in a separate time zone.
Guam's already in the new year.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Right.
If you start at the East Coast, there's six, because there's the four continental time zones, there's Alaska, and then there's Hawaii.
Correct.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought all of Alaska was in a single time zone or something like that.
And this exercise in futility is exactly why amateur radio operators use universal coordinated time, otherwise known as Greenwich Mean Time.
That's what we are using.
Greenwich is just mean time.
Cool. Yes, you're right.
Just an FYI, the W is not pronounced, so it's just Greenwich rather than Greenwich. Just saying.
Oh, I didn't
also,
know that.
In this summer,
you're just European.
Also, yeah, we're American. Summer, we don't give a fuck. Can I say something? Right, when we got summer in the UK, we go off GMT or UTC and we end up on BST, British Summertime.
Yeah, that's just odd. That really is odd. If you install an OS sometime over the summer, your whole time zones are all thrown out. I'll set it to like London and Lisbon, I think, time. It's like, hang on a minute, that's not quite right. There's an hour either way. It's just bizarre.
Anyway, I'm so looking forward to my traditional pork and sauerkraut meal tomorrow. That's a German tradition here.
I'm not sure that music is Creative Commons licensed.
Yeah, I'm sure it's not. My son, I'm about ready to wring his neck, but anywho.
Remember, but yeah, don't plan to do it. That's an extra 5 to 10 years.
That's right. So, but that's what I eat for the first meal of the new year is pork and sauerkraut. That's a long time,
I'm already going after the pork right now.
I'm disappointed about pizza, Joe.
Yeah, I had Chinese for dinner tonight.
I'll get a sour German tomorrow.
Hey, that's what I had for dinner tonight was Chinese.
Yeah. Well, the southern tradition is to get poke salad.
Well, I always thought it was black-eyed peas in the south.
I used to do black-eyed peas and ham. Right now I'm cooking up some pork shoulder steaks in walnut oil.
That actually sounds delicious.
Oh, see, most of my family's from Alabama and New Orleans, and for us, the tradition is shrimp jambalaya.
Hey, Peter 64, you really don't have any comprehension of just how bad that Little Caesar's pizza is, do you? You didn't try that, did you?
I used to work there. We didn't eat a lot of takeout while we were over there.
Well, put it this way. If it comes between Little Caesars or Frozen, I'll take the Little Caesars.
No way. The Frozen.
Oh, there are
good quality
Frozen.
Here's what it's weird. It depends on what kind of Frozen and then reheated.
Well, it depends on what kind of Frozen you're talking about, though. I mean, if you're talking about DiGiorno.
I know. I'll take any frozen pizza over Little Caesars. I'll put it this way, Peter. The last time I ate Little Caesars, I did not poop for 4 days, and when I did, it really hurt.
Come on. Pizza is like
you
sex.
You can get that from just about any pizza.
Pizza is like sex. Right. When it's good, it's great. And when it's bad, it's still pretty damn good.
That's
Amen.
Right.
Amen.
Happy New Year's, everybody.
Absolutely.
Golf is like... Golf
and I'm
like
I don't know,
sex.
There's some sex
you don't
I
have
would
to be
run
good
from.
At it to enjoy it, they tell me.
Well, the only good thing is pizza won't give you the clap.
If you get it more than once, is it an applause?
Java Girl says, throw away the pizza and eat the box.
Oh, that's
all right.
Good.
All right, Jess. Hey,
she's not wrong.
I don't say Pizza Hut is actually
you know,
not that great of pizza anymore
pizza
either.
With crabs on it.
Whoa. I'm off to bed, so.
I'll take Pizza Hut over Little Caesars.
Can I
will say that. They have a pizza up here that has fish, crab, and lobster on it.
Cheers, gents.
Ooh, that sounds...
I don't know about that.
No, thank you.
Hey, Pipe Man, thanks a lot for hanging out with us, man. You were awesome.
Well, see, it all depends on what kind of later, fish we're talking about. Because I'll take seafood on pizza any day, but what fish are we talking about?
Yeah.
Halibut.
I'll take clams, maybe trout.
Or clams, pretty good. Scallops maybe, mussels. Yeah, that might be good.
And me,
have y'all ever cooked mussels on the grill? Like a charcoal grill, not a gas grill?
Yes. Oh, mussels on the grill. Oh.
And like I said, Klaatu's probably vomiting.
Try veggies on the grill. Klaatu would even eat that.
He would.
I love artichokes on the grill.
Oh, yeah.
Artichokes, asparagos. Man.
Or take some corn on the cob on the grill. Oh.
Yeah, that's nice. Corn on the cob on the barbie.
Now, when you do corn on the cob, do you soak it in water for about 15 minutes before you put it on the grill and leave it in the husk?
Or wrap it in aluminum foil?
Yeah, we generally soak it and then leave it in the husk. Oh, turns out really good.
Yeah, you must be from the south because everybody up here takes it out of the husk, wraps it in aluminum foil, and puts some butter in it. And I'm just like, no, that's not how you do it.
Hey, I told you, half my family's from Alabama and Louisiana, man.
That's one of the things that I have kind of made a resolution for the new year is to eat more vegetables. I don't eat nearly enough. I'm sorry.
Gorkon, man, you get a grill, but I just can't digest a wheelchair.
Joe, we would never have guessed looking at your physique.
Kiss my ass. it's just one of those things that you know, I like certain vegetables, but I don't know. It's just I don't like canned vegetables. They're nasty. The only ones that I can actually keep around the house that are tolerable are the frozen ones, and I don't even like those. I'd much rather have fresh vegetables, and keeping them fresh, you know, for like a week.
Well, that's what life's
not always
for.
The easiest.
Well, here's a southern one for you.
What you got to do, man, is you got to get your own little bitty mini garden and just set it in the windowsill and let it grow.
Here's a southern one for you: fried okra.
Okra.
Yeah,
fried green tomatoes.
Okra.
Now, fried green tomatoes is good.
Very good.
Okra.
I guess I'm the odd man out here then, because I love me some fried okra.
Oh, dude, oh yeah, I haven't had fried okra in 3 years. I am dying for some fried okra. Thanks.
I think it's an interesting texture.
What is it? I've never heard of this.
It's its own vegetable.
Yeah, Peter, it's like a it's okay. The outside is like a pepper, but a little more fibrous, and the inside is like
it's full
snot,
of oil.
And then there's little balls that pop.
Yeah,
it's not like a chili.
No, it's not spicy at all. It's not spicy.
No, it's not spicy at all.
It's almost like a mix between, say, a gourd fruit and an asparagus.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I see it now.
And if you fry it up, it just pops in your mouth, you know?
Now, fried mushrooms. I love fried mushrooms, but they're not exactly healthy.
It
loses all of the slimy. You don't get any of the slime when you fry it. It's just this nice, juicy piece of veggie.
It also depends on how you fry it. Like I say, walnut oil.
I wanted to hear what Klaatu had to say.
I'll go even better and say fried portobello mushrooms.
I want to hear what Klaatu had to say about vegetables. He's the pro.
Yeah, I like them.
Right on. Thanks, Klaatu.
No problem.
That's helpful.
I'm here when you need me.
What kind of mushrooms would you make, though? That's my question. What would you make, Klaatu? Yeah, if you're making your own dinner right now, what would you make? Like a salad, or what would you do?
No, I mean, now that you guys are talking about grilling, I would grill a bunch of vegetables, like on a kebab, and just and eat it right off the kebab stick. That's good stuff. Like, you know, potatoes, tomatoes, artichoke hearts, mushrooms.
Capsicum, onion, mushies. Klaatu, I'm going to like the barbie now.
I know. It's really good. I love grilled vegetables.
Yeah. Throw some prawns in there.
Well, I was going to say, I'd have to go with that.
But you have to put some food alongside it.
I'd have to go with that and either throw some crawfish, or crawdads, or some shrimp on there.
Check question. Hey, Clutch, you don't need prawns in that at all.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'd go with all the vegetables you just said, but then I'd add in either some crawdads or some shrimp to it.
Food.
Yeah. No, shrimp or vegetables. Yeah,
those are insects, I believe, right?
They're arachnids. No, yeah.
Yes, so, very high protein, low fat, very good for you.
So the one thing I'm missing from the South, I've been missing collard greens. How about anybody else?
Never had them.
Oh, man.
I've got a pot
that I'll be eating tomorrow.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with segregated greens.
Yeah. I can't, for spinach, I'd much rather have it raw than I would cook, because cooked spinach is just, yeah. Yeah, you baby too. Spinach leaves on a salad, that's a winner.
I was thinking that.
You're probably not cooking it the right way. You got to get about, you got to cook a pound of bacon, drain off all the fat, into the water, a little bit of vinegar.
Casserole, yeah, spinach is just incredible. Or like you guys said, raw in a salad. But slimy spinach out of a can, no. With vinegar,
when you guys that's nasty. Talking about fried mushrooms, I was thinking to myself, why would you ruin a perfectly good mushroom?
Now the only way I'll eat spinach is the spinach leaves in a salad, man. That's
You need to try dicing up a bunch of spinach leaves and pop them into a nice thick stew.
I put them on pizza.
Now, do you guys have morel mushrooms where you are?
Yeah.
Morels are like butter, man.
Yeah, they're a little too rich for me. They don't agree with me at all. I like them, but
now there's something that I've started doing for my wife.
I won't eat mushrooms. I think they're nasty.
Oh, I love mushrooms. Something I started doing for my wife, and this is not for Klaatu because it involves meat. But we like pizza in our house, of course. But my wife is a diabetic, so it's something where she shouldn't really be eating. So about once a week, I bake her a low-carb pizza, and that's essentially the bottom is a hamburger and 2 cups of mozzarella mixed together. Then you just kind of flatten it down on your pizza pan and throw your sauce and cheese and whatever else you want on top of that. And it's not quite pizza, but it kind of gives you that flavor of pizza, and it's a little bit better for my wife to eat. And I like to put more vegetables on that, too.
How long do you bake that before you bread it and deep fry it?
I don't bread it or deep fry it, but I bake it for just until the cheese gets golden brown, just kind of like a good pizza.
Oh, back onto the mushrooms thing. Got a great recipe for stuffed mushrooms. You take just any old mushroom, snap the stem off, shove a bunch of cream cheese in it, and dice up a couple of onions and put that on top, and then put some extra old cheddar right on top, lay that on the grill, and let it rip 10 minutes later. Mm.
I've got one for you.
Good.
It's a variation on that same recipe. The only difference is you take and dice up jalapenos and stuff them in the sour cream or whatever you put in the mushroom.
That sounds yummy.
Aren't they hot? Those bloody things. They're peppers, aren't they?
Well, when you've eaten jalapenos and habaneros and other peppers, jalapenos aren't that hot. But if you've never really had a hot pepper before, yeah, it'll probably be
So when you're stuffing your jalapenos, do you de-seed them or do you leave the seeds in?
Leave the seeds in, you wimp.
If it's hot, I'm not touching them and dicing up the jalapenos and throwing them in the sour cream in the mushroom. But yeah, you leave the seeds in no matter how you do it.
The thing with the jalapenos is make sure that when you're picking the jalapenos out, go for the really tiny ones. The really absolutely minuscule ones, the smallest the better. They are the really fucking strong arse ones. I mean, the bigger ones, they're a bit weak, but the small ones, they are really fucking concentrated.
Yeah, jalapenos.
Actually,
Actually,
they're weak.
You want some? You want some concentrated jalapenos? Find somebody from South America, Guatemala, Argentina, wherever, who knows how to grow jalapenos. What they do is they actually grow them in sort of a greenhouse setting, where they have basically water. They're water sprinkling on them basically 24/7. The trick with any pepper is that the more you water it, the hotter it grows. So they basically water them 24/7 until they're fully ripe to get them as hot as they can get them.
Nice. Hey, Peter, yeah, I think of jalapenos. They're like the gateway pepper, or like maybe a fulcrum,
right,
on a seesaw. So everybody's sitting on the cool side of the seesaw. The jalapeno is the hottest thing they can imagine. But if you actually eat spicy food and get into it, the jalapeno is about the coolest thing you consider hot and spicy.
Yep.
I don't eat nothing like that, Pokey. Like I said, anything hotter than Vegemite's too hot for me.
Even pepperoncinis?
No, honest to God. Capsicum on the barbecue is about as close to hot as I'll ever get.
I was going to say, I've had Japanese yellow mustard, and we're not talking about American yellow mustard. We're talking Japanese yellow mustard. That stuff, I don't know what kind of peppers or whatever they put in them, but that stuff, it goes down, it's kind of hot, but as soon as it hits your stomach, it literally is like someone lit a fire up your spine, and then it shoots out your eyeballs. That's hot.
I think the Oriental stuff is horseradish, not
well, that's
peppers.
Wasabi. I really love wasabi. That stuff's great. But I don't think wasabi and yellow mustard are going to be the same thing, because mustard's mustard and wasabi's a horseradish. It's a different plant.
I was going to say, wasabi's
and it's green.
Right. True wasabi is actually kind of hard to get here in the States. You know.
Maybe it's over there, maybe in the middle of the country, out here by the coast, you can get it all over the place.
See, it's a different world, almost. It really kind of is. The wasabi I would find here in the store, it's not what they would call true wasabi.
It's powder.
Right, it's just not, it's not the same. But
no, that's real wasabi. It has to be powderized, and you have to mix it up, because if it's stored wet, then the spice that's in, I forget what the spice is called. It's not capsaicin. It's not the same as other peppers. But that spice evaporates if it's wet. You have to keep it dry to preserve it.
Interesting.
It gets nasty after a while.
I like wasabi peas for a snack.
Yeah, those are really good.
Have y'all ever had the Vietnamese chili peppers?
Nope.
I have no idea.
I have.
Yep. How long ago did this evolve into a food conversation?
Those bad boys are pretty hot.
And we were on amateur radio. We started getting hungry.
It's the third time it's devolved into food conversation.
I was going to say, that's going to be common with this crowd.
I've never actually had the Vietnamese peppers, but I've wanted to try them. I've been actually looking for them. I haven't been able to find them anywhere around here.
Where are you at now? I can tell you.
I'm in the Baltimore, D.C. area, and it's probably just because I'm not looking in the right place.
Go start scouting out your local farmers markets, man. I know down towards Washington, there's a farmers market that has Vietnamese chili peppers, because I've driven through there.
Nice. I'll have to check it out.
Interesting.
And
probably some Oriental markets, too.
Anybody who feels the conversation has devolved to a particular topic, it's your show, too, man. You can. I didn't see who said it, but you know, feel free to change the subject. We're all in.
Well, yeah, it's not so much that is like I've only got about 20 minutes to be in here to participate. So if someone wants to have like a technical discussion, I'd love to get in on that before I have to step out and, you know, bring in the new year.
So I've got the problem.
Beowulf Busters.
Yeah. What about that Windows 8 Surface and RT and UEFI and
oh,
stuff?
Shut up, you drunk fuck.
Yeah.
Right,
right.
Actually,
hey, right,
I've got
thanks.
A question for y'all. Here's a technical one.
I resemble that remark.
Hey, thanks, Thistleweb. Let's go back to food. How about that?
I've got a technical question for you guys, if we want to change the subject. A couple articles that came back out in November talking about how the GNOME project was basically switching their opinion and going to release a sort of GNOME 2-esque version of GNOME now. Again, anybody tried that out, or what's their opinion on that? Because I was thinking of trying it out.
I haven't tried that out, and I've heard about it, but I was wondering if anybody in here, to sort of tack on a question to your question, was even sort of believing that GNOME has any idea what they're going to be doing in the next 6 months.
Yeah, I don't think they do.
That would be the point where they realize that pissing people off on a fucking huge scale was probably not a good idea.
Well, wow, welcome to GNOME, and I love KDE, so I don't guess I'll be trying that anytime soon.
Yeah, when I checked in earlier on this thing, I heard about, you know, people discussing KDE, and now we're talking about GNOME, and Thistleweb mentions pissing people off, and that's sort of the way Ubuntu is going now, right? I mean, they don't give a crap about how anybody does anything these days. They're just going to go their own way. They're going to be Apple II, and I think GNOME is like pulling back and saying, well, we're going to do something different. We're going to put out an OS. We're going to have a desktop that's all our own. Meanwhile, since it's open source, everybody's taking it in 3 or 4 or 5 or 6, 7 other directions. And I'd like to know where the desktop thing is going, because I'm personally a fan of GNOME, but I don't see where it's going to wind up at this point.
Well, for me, I don't use GNOME. I use OpenVox, and I have used XFCE. I sort of switched back and forth between them. But I use Nautilus as my file manager, primarily because it has a split pane. And as soon as the GNOME developers decide the split pane, oh, we don't want that, we're going to remove that. That was the point where I completely flipped on GNOME. I really do not give a hoot about GNOME. As far as I'm concerned, they can dissolve, they can run into... I don't care, honestly. I really don't care. I would love... That's just one in quite a lot of decisions, but that's the one that particularly affected me, was we are going to remove that split pane. It's like, how fucking dare you? That's the only reason I use Nautilus. If it wasn't for a split pane, I would not use Nautilus. That's the only reason I use Nautilus. And that, to me, was like a complete... basically a big middle finger to the users of GNOME. To me, at that point, I don't care what happens to GNOME. If GNOME runs off the edge of a cliff with a handful of users, a handful of developers, and everyone else abandoned them, so be it. They've made their own bed, as far as I'm concerned.
Hey, this web, I'm not a GNOME user. What do you mean by a split pane?
It's the tree split in half, so you can see one folder on one side and one folder on the other side.
Yeah, in Nautilus, if you press the F3 button, I don't use it very often. I have to say, I don't use it very often, but I love the fact that it's there. That is the reason I use Nautilus. Every now and again, when I have to copy something across from one folder to another, I click F3 and it splits that window in half.
That's
nice. It
gives
a split pane. Tell me about it. That is fucking useful. That is really fucking useful.
Here's something for you, Thistleweb. If you use Linux Mint, the latest Linux Mint ships with Nemo as the file manager.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And it has
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons why Nemo exists, why Mint decided to fork it in the first place, is because the GNOME developers are assholes. The GNOME developers decided, oh, no one uses that split pane shite. We'll just remove that. No, you will fucking not. That's the only time, I kid you not, it's the only time I have ever, as soon as I read something on like Slashdot or OMG Ubuntu or whatever, that's the only time I have ever immediately jumped into Synaptic and said, lock Nautilus at this exact version. Do not allow it under any circumstances to upgrade, because I want that split pane. That's the only program I have ever actually jumped out of my way to stick at that version, because the GNOME developers are fucking arseholes.
But you didn't care. Thistleweb. I just fired up not Nautilus. I just fired up Dolphin on my Slackware 14 install, and I hit F3 and it split my pane.
It's been an included feature since like Midnight Commander.
I was going to say, there's also Tux Commander, which has that too. So there are other file managers that have that feature.
I know that.
You keep up this kind of drink, and you're going to have a splitting pain of your own tomorrow, so don't even worry about it.
To step back a second.
It goes clear back to on Windows, the old Norton Commander.
Right.
See, that's one drawback. That's one drawback to, you know, I use XFCE and Thunar.
Right.
Thunar doesn't have split pane functionality, and that's the one thing I miss about Nautilus.
But you're
what
also
do you
going
use
into
the
split
pane for?
Okay, well, let me finish this thought since I've said it like seven times already.
FTP system?
Hang on.
Sorry about that, but I mean, you're also jumping into the fact that you don't like the Nautilus file manager, but that's not all of GNOME. And of course, if it doesn't do what you want to do, you can throw in whatever file manager you want. And isn't that part of what the freedom allows you? You don't have to get pissed off at the GNOME developers because they went a different way. If you choose to do something or you choose to use a workflow that works in a different way that they've decided on, you have a path to, you know, the method that you want to use. You don't have to, you don't have to condemn GNOME for that.
You're right. Up to a point, you're right. I mean, the way I look at it is, if it was something, when GNOME changed from GTK2 to GTK3, everything needed to be ported. That's fine, I get that. When they port various functions and features across and various applications across, I get the fact that there's going to be limited resources and all of that. I get all that. The thing is, with the split pane feature, that was the only one that concerned me. I mean, there's various other features as well that they decided to lobotomize, but that was the one that affected me, was the split pane. So that's a personal thing from me, is like the split panes. I need that, I want that, I like that, I enjoy that, I want to use that. Don't take that away from me. I get that. Now, when you take that away, it's something that's already been developed. It's already been ported. It's not as if it's something that they say, well, okay, it doesn't really fit with the new GTK, so it might take us a while to get there. I get all that. But it's already been done. It's already been converted. It exists. The code's already working. Why take it away? That's my point. It's not getting anyone's way. Why take it away?
Let me ask you this, K5. There may not have been anybody to maintain it either.
Let me ask you this, K5. If somebody were to do just that, to take out Nautilus and, you know, put in a different file manager, how much breaks? I mean, because with the desktop environment like GNOME, so many of these programs are linked into one another that, I mean, you just try to remove one and you're removing the whole desktop because everything relies on everything else. And if you don't remove it and just try to install a different program and use that instead, well, then it's not always opened by default when you go to click on files or stuff like that. It doesn't, I mean, it sounds, you know, easy to do, but there are certain cases within desktop environments where you simply can't do that. And I don't know if Nautilus is one of those cases or not. But it does exist.
Actually, it is one of those cases because Nautilus actually does the desktop environment as well. You actually have to go through some amazing contortions to use Nautilus without having it actually start a GNOME desktop on you. The thing that I look at is that when things like GNOME 3 were being developed, there were a lot of decisions that were being made that it was like, they were just being put out there because they wanted kind of like a change for change's sake type thing. And I just didn't have any respect for that. I mean, this is a perfect example of one of those things where it didn't make any sense to actually make this change. You know, it's taking away functionality that people have come to rely on. And you don't just change that stuff for the sake of being different.
I don't know about that, Soundchaser. I think they had their reasons. If you look at their discussion, they have use cases for all the simplifications that they're doing.
Well, let to address Pokey's question, actually, I'm not sure if I even remember it now, but I think the idea was that there's kind of two things involved there. One is the integration of the file manager and perhaps the desktop manager with GNOME overall as a desktop environment. And the other thing is integrating all of those things as package dependencies in whatever particular distribution you're using. And yeah, one could be problematic if you're trying to like just uninstall Nautilus. That can create all kinds of package dependency issues. And I can see where that would be a problem. But I think in that case, what you do is you leave everything that GNOME requires in place, and then you incorporate what other additional file managers or window managers that you want to include for your specifications. And then you do whatever configuration is necessary to change them. And then as far as ThistleWeb is, what he said about, the things being removed. Yeah, I also have a problem with functionality being taken out for no particular reason. And if that code was in there and working and it was literally removed, I can see where
moved in from lounge, I
you know, someone might be upset about that. But if it's instead sort of still remaining in the code base but just turned off and maybe there's a switch to turn it back on, that might be something worth investigating. But if they've actually ripped out working code, yeah, I can understand why someone might be upset about that.
See, that's exactly what they did. They basically removed the ability to do split pane, period.
Yeah, that's the point. I get the fact that they try to simplify it. I totally understand that. And if they say that we will have it by default, only a single pane, and you have to go into the settings to change that and enable that extra split pane, that's fine. I have no problems with that. But when they actually remove that functionality, that is when I get irate. That's when I get pissed off.
Hello, Stink Dog.
He's muted and deafened right now.
Sorry, we were talking about something, and then I kind of got a bit of ranty.
Oh, is there another one as well? Hawaii or whatever? And there's another island.
Hey, Stank, sounds like he's playing back from earlier. What's up, Stank Dog?
Come on, apparently
there is a Mumble client for iOS.
Wow.
And currently it's in beta.
There you go.
He's sampling us.
He's playing back the thing about the Mumble client for iOS. I guess maybe he's on his iOS device now.
Wow, what kind of a delay is he on? That was like an hour ago.
No, he's on his iPad as a cutting board.
What kind of clusterfuck is this?
Yeah, that's what the light effect of this on Mumble.
I feel that way on iOS too.
Apparently, there is a Mumble client for such and such.
Wow.
You can sort of detect that, oh, that's full of shit. They're using that very same fucking Mumble client.
Ladies and gentlemen, the patron saint of Hack Republic Radio, Mr. Stank Dog. Like
Android tablet was the name of it, so he wouldn't be busted. But yeah, no, it's actually.
I can't hear jack shit in this verbal gangbang going on here.
You know, actually, that's one of the things I figured out last year. I mean, I'm almost 40. I'll be 40 next year.
I have a question for you guys about Mumble.
Okay, well, that's great. At least somebody had something to say that wasn't an invocation of something that happened 5 hours ago. What's the question about Mumble?
Yeah, what is the benefit of both muting and deafening yourself other than you want to look at what's written in the chat? I mean, you can't hear anything, you can't say anything.
Yeah, that's a good one, and I also want to, well, I'll let you do that, but I want to mention the to list myself when you're done with that.
I agree with the Freak Factor comment. Let's start kicking people.
Yeah, the whole thing is probably just so folks can sit in the chat channel and take up, you know, one of the 35 available spots for no apparent reason.
I see this, you know, in other shows, too. It's not just here and this one.
Unmuted.
Hey, let's call Walmart!
It's basically, it's the equivalent of running your IRC session in screen, so it never stops, no matter what you're doing.
So who's for reinstating Freak Factor?
Here.
Yes.
And I would just like to... Ooh, let me interject here. Stank Dog is like killing me, and I'm like feeding back. Anyway,
I love it.
Yeah. For some people, will make a difference, or they'll be interested. And for most people in here, they will not. And for most people listening, they won't care either. But there has been a cell phone debate in my life recently about whether to go back to the iPhone or to continue on with some other kind of mobile device. And I have made that decision. I have recently purchased a new cell phone, and it is a Galaxy S3. So I have stayed
good man,
with Android.
Yay!
Excellent.
Okay, can I talk about two things then? I want to do Natoolish and say something about Android as well. Quick, Natoolish, the side pain thing that Fistful was on about, I went away and I came back.
You cut out, you said two things, yeah, you started talking,
yeah,
and you died.
Yeah, you cut out, and you were challenged. I do believe you were challenging the split pain thing. I'm not having that. I'm really not having that. The split pains is fucking useful. I don't care what anyone says, it's useful.
Man, you keep it up and I'll give you split pains.
Hey, that's why I use the Terminator for my console. Because it has for my command prompt, because it has the ability to split it into up to, I think it supports up to 32 split pains.
Is that Terminator?
Yeah, Terminator. It's a GTK based command prompt, terminal emulator.
Yeah, it's a terminal. It's quite good actually, Terminator.
And basically, like I do server administration as part of my job, and if I have to log into more than one server at the same time via SSH, I can just split the pane into multiple panes and log into all of them from the same window rather than open up multiple terminal windows. And not only that, but Terminator also supports copying and pasting, unlike certain some terminal emulators don't support that. Some do. Terminator is one of those that supports copying, pasting in between the pane. And it's just really good, so I don't have to sit there and open up multiple windows, to do all my server administration.
I think most terminals do support the copying, pasting, but not all of them have like the Control-Shift-C, Control-Shift-V.
Yeah,
you just have to use the middle click.
Yeah, it's not the typical Control-Shift-whatever. Yeah.
Or you just have to use Shift-Insert to actually paste.
Yeah.
Oh, I've never tried that before.
Yeah, that one works really well. I tend to still use Screen, primarily because Screen will work with any terminal emulator, and it can stay up when you disconnect from it and everything. And it's basically on every machine I ever have to admin, so it works really well for me in that respect.
Well, yeah. I mean, if I'm remoting into a machine that I'm using to do multiple sessions, I'll use Screen. But when it's on my local machine, I'm usually using Terminator. But I can definitely see Thistleweb's point of view here, because I mean multiple panes is just really useful on any application.
What's in the other pane in Nautilus? I mean, what is
when, the file
right,
list?
When you open up Nautilus, when you open up any file manager, you've got like your home directory, and you move about, you double click on some directory, some icon that opens up another directory. If you click F3. In Nautilus, it's F3. I think it's probably F3 in like Dolphin as well. But in Nautilus,
it's F3 in Dolphin, Klaatu, if you want to test it out.
Yeah, F3. It basically splits the pane in half. So you've got two versions of the same thing. So you can move independently. You can control. You can move, set one folder as something in the left pane, and then another folder as something in the other pane. And then right-click on something and copy to other pane, move to other pane, and either side. That's the point of it. Then you click F3, it revises it back to the single pane again. That's the point. It's not something you use that much, but it's something that when you're copying and pasting things, it's so handy. It's really handy. I mean, I love Thunar, but Thunar doesn't have that. So that's the reason why. That's the reason why I don't use Thunar. That's the reason why I use Nautilus, is that it has the split pane option as and when I need it. I don't use it very often, but as and when I need it, I know that the F3 button toggles the split pane on and off.
Well, Thistleweb, I got to tell you, man, I have never used this feature before, but I really appreciate you pointing out that it actually exists, and I'm going to like this.
It basically saves you having to open up a second window to copy the file over.
Exactly.
Especially if you want to keep the first one open.
Exactly, and that's the thing. When the GNOME developers decide, oh, that's not a useful feature, we'll just remove that. No, you will fucking not remove that. Absolutely no hell, no way you will fucking remove that. That's why I will lock Nautilus onto that version so that it will not update to get that new version and remove that feature. No hell, no way. I like that feature. That's fucking useful to me.
Well, that's what Mint did after the GNOME project announced that. They basically locked in their version of Nautilus so that it would not update to the next version.
Yeah, exactly. Mint forked it and called it Nemo, which I appreciate. That's one of the good things that that Mint have done. And then Ubuntu as well. They decided they're going to lock it to 3.4. Whatever it is, they're going to lock it into the version before that, which is a good thing. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that's a good thing. Both the Mint and Ubuntu saw the same thing coming, and both handled it in their own different ways. And I appreciate both ways.
For those who still don't understand it, go ahead and take a look at any standard FTP client. You'll see a similar split pane system in most of cases.
Yeah, trying to remember. The only one that comes to mind is WSFTP.
See, the thing is, when people say it's like... Still around? Well, yeah, that's it. I mean, when people say it's like a split pane like Midnight Commander, the thing is, Midnight Commander is two panes all the time. That's what it's designed around. There's a few file managers, EMLEF2, or FM2, something like that.
EFM?
That's based around two panes as well. The thing is, for me, I don't like two panes as a normal daily use. What I do like is a single pane. When every now and again, when I want to copy stuff across, I like the two pane. And where I can just flick a button and split it into two panes and do that copying and flick the button and bring it back to one pane again, that's perfect. That's absolutely perfect. And that's what Nautilus does.
What was their excuse for pulling it out in the first place?
I have no idea. I really have no idea. That was the point where GNOME just flipped off the edge of the cliff for me. It's like they removed it for me for no good fucking reason. I don't know.
See, I was going to say, I feel the same way about, like I said, Terminator. With Terminator, it's just a matter of hitting Control-Shift-O or Control-Shift-E, and it splits the pane horizontally or vertically, however you want to fit it on the screen. And if they were to, if the developer of Terminator was to suddenly say, oh, we don't need split panes anymore, I'm removing that from Terminator, I would just flip. I feel Thistleweb's pain.
Is that the same key sequence as splitting terminal and screen? And yeah, second, like what I heard.
Hi, everybody. Happy New Fear.
Happy New Year, Snake Dog. Good night, bro. We love you.
I was saying something, or I think I was. And then, I'm getting Gloom Shell is sort of freezing on my computer every now and again. I was saying something about the two lists in Android, or at least I think I was, and then computer problem. Did anyone hear any of that?
Nope. No, I didn't.
Nope.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the thing is, I mean, when people say it's like, oh, you've got all these various multi-pane, like EM, FL, FM2, whatever it is, that type of thing, that's fine, that's dual pane, that's all the time. I mean, for me, I like the single pane normally. It's just, I know. Okay.
What I had understood, Thistleweb, is it was an intentional dumbing down of the interface that we don't want the user to have to learn all these options and stuff, so we're going to eliminate them?
You know, that's kind of ridiculous, though, because if you eliminate the options for the power users, then you're not going to have any power users that are willing to give really good feedback on the product. And that's a shame.
Well, I think that's exactly the point. We're in a room full of power users.
Sounds like a good business plan to me. You get rid of your power users, you can possibly sell some support.
Well, the thing is, I mean, with the split panes...
If you say split panes again, I'm booting you. I'm not kidding.
Well, that feature was the one thing that really got me irate.
Yes, it really... We know!
The thing is, there was other features as well, like the removing of the tree view on the side pane, as well as the status menu as well. That was also removed at the same time as the feature that affected me, and it was all these things that happened at the same time. You're like, well, why remove them? They work just fine. I get the fact that they don't want to port them, or they're down the feature list. It's
Hang
almost
on,
like
KT4, you had something to say here.
I had something to say, basically what I thought I was saying before, okay? So I'll try again, but I think it'll be okay. So anyway, so basically, yeah, the side pain, all this removing the side pain and all that. I don't really understand what that's about, to be honest, because I mean, I've used GNOME for years, and GNOME 2, and then more recently GNOME 3, and and when I get to the tool list, all I really do is I just open up my files and go like review, show hidden file and folder, and get into the dot folders, right? And that's what I do. So all this removing the side pane, I don't really understand what that's about. In fact, I just a little while ago went and looked at GNOME, the files in GNOME 3.4 just to see if I could find this thing, but Shim was 3.6 where it got removed. Anyway, so yeah, there's that. But with GNOME, yeah, there is this idea that they remove features, and the power off button in the menu, the shutdown, was removed originally, and except maybe showing on the live CDs, and people complained about that on the internet, and the GNOME developers listened, and so they put it back there by default. And what I didn't say before is how there used to be an extension for that. Well, there still is, really, for the old versions. I don't have it there by default, so GNOME 3.4, for example. And then the other thing was the Android. Somebody mentioned about how they had stayed with Android and stuff like that. And what I thought of is this guy who, on Facebook, probably about a week ago now, he basically went on there and said, I'm thinking of switching from Android to a Windows phone because I don't really know Android, and all the people I know, I don't know anyone that Android either. And I was going to reply back to that. I didn't do it, but I was basically going to reply and say, I might still reply if I could find it and bothered. But anyway, I was basically going to say, like, it's up to you what you use, but I was just researching yourself, and originally I was going to actually put something about it's about Android and iOS these days, really. So that was my two points, basically, that I couldn't get in before. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm looking at Nautilus that I have here. It's 3.4.2 that I have on Crunchbang, which is Debian Wheezy. It's split panes, it's not the side view, it's split panes. If you click F3, it got removed in 2.6, I think. 3.6,
hey,
whatever.
Hey, Disselweb.
Yes, dear.
You gotta learn to learn to code, man. Put the feature back in and take care of it.
Yeah,
split
tell me about
is better than
you,
split
you could have learned how to do it quicker than you've taken to explain this to us for the past 2.5 hours.
Hey, Pokey, I think he said split panes again. Didn't you say you were going
to
kick
him? Yeah, it's time to kick him, I think.
Oh, yeah, come on, don't make me be a bad guy. I was trying to get him to stop.
Yeah, I blame the booze, but I get the point. Yeah, okay. So we'll move on.
I'm just trying to be an asshole, so.
No, that's fine. That's cool. That's cool. But it's time we moved on with the subject anyway.
I still love you, Thistleweb, even though.
Don't make me be a bully. I'm just being a bully.
Yeah, that's cool. I've made my point. Spot pains, that's all I'm saying. Right, move on.
See, is that it?
But next subject.
Yeah, and you guys proved I'm too much of a wimp to actually kick somebody.
Anyway.
Bluff called.
Did you guys see the countdown?
I love you so much, man.
I was going to say, did you guys see the countdown on the Ubuntu website? They're counting down to something. What?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, we're...
Ubuntu phone.
The new ones are gone, so we can't talk about that anymore.
Yeah, Ubuntu phone.
Yeah, what it is.
They're reintroducing split panes.
Maybe they're going to have split
panes. All right, now I'm kicking somebody now.
Actually, they never kicked that particular feature. They were wise. But no, the Ubuntu countdown, what it is, it's 3D. Where you have to actually use your screen looks absolutely god awful unless you use 3D specs when you're using your computer. That's what it is.
Well, you know, when we talked about this earlier, I think I kind of messed it up. I meant to say it was going to be holographic 3D Prawn. Okay, that's what it's really going to be.
Oh, you think so?
They're going to go to a command line only.
I bet you it's a tablet.
Well, they already do a tablet.
It was discussed earlier, but I think a tablet as well. As for the pains, oh no, I'm going to bring it up again. Oh yes, I am. Only briefly. I just thought Thistlewolf said that they didn't remove it in Ubuntu, and I just want to quickly add on to that. This feature was complained about, or whatever it was, for 3.6, and it didn't fit in properly with Unity or whatever it was. So, in Ubuntu 12.10, they decided to go back to the 3.4 version of Natulis. So yeah, they did that.
Yeah, exactly. They realised it wasn't just that feature, it was other features, but they held it back and Mint forked it as well. But yeah, we've moved on from that.
I don't want to labour that.
You know, you guys just made me think of something. You know what would be the ultimate gimmick for them to pull, and I wouldn't even put it past them, is if they came out with a phone or a tablet, but it had like a 3DS screen, like the Nintendo 3DS, if it had a screen like that on it.
Well, they've got that. I was just going to ask if anybody had in real life had encountered like an Evo 3D, or I guess I was just looking at a search because I couldn't remember what it was. There's also an Optimus 3D out there.
That already exists? Oh, shit, I take it back.
Like for a year, Pokey.
Huh.
Yeah.
You know, not with glasses or whatever. It's like the 3DS. I guess you get close enough to it, you don't need glasses. It just gives you a headache.
Yep, HTC had a phone like that, and a friend of mine had it, and I really... it looked awful. I didn't like it. Kind of pointless, really.
For that matter, have any of us ever played with 3DS?
Yeah, I don't like it either.
I tried one in the store, in like the electronics section of Walmart, for a couple of minutes. I was not impressed.
It felt like fake, you know?
It was just really hard to focus on. When it was out of focus, it looked fairly 3D-ish, but, you know, if I tried real hard and focused, then it wasn't 3D anymore.
So it's like one of those old posters they had back in the 80s.
Oh, the Magic Eye posters? I love those. Those are cool.
God, all they ever gave me was a friggin' headache.
Yeah, how many people here... Yeah, exactly. How many people could actually how many people could see the Magic Eye things? I've tried, and for the life of me, I could not see any of them. There was only one I could ever...
The trick to it is you either have to be drunk or blind in one eye, which right now I'm drunk, and I'm blind in one eye.
So you
the only one I ever was a computer ad out of a magazine that, you know, you ripped the thing out and then unfolded it and hung it on the wall. And I could see that one.
2 minute warning.
Thanks.
Yep. Central time zone coming up.
Yeah, I could see all the...
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.